All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight, feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant lands.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We are here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday, not doing Triple Play Thursday this morning. Dan Chagrou is taking some time off. He's off this week. Our good friend Ben is filling in. But we are doing anti-Valentine's Day songs a little bit later on in the show because it is time for our annual anti-Valentine's Day show. I hate Valentine's Day. Always have. Even when I was with a significant other, I've always hated it. And so we always do a special anti-Valentine's Day show. And so we're going to talk about, we've got a whole bunch of like horrible and sometimes funny breakup stories that we're going to be telling straight from people who have posted about them on the web. And we'll get some of those stories. Some of them will make you feel better about your that you're single at this point. If you have any of those stories that you want to share, we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Talk and text your breakup stories. We're going to talk about some of the saddest songs that you can play for Valentine's Day. And I'm going to recommend some of the most inappropriate Valentine's Day movies to watch. Absolutely anti-Valentine's Day movies, and we'll suggest all that, plus other stories and anti-Valentine's Day news and things like that. So 312-981-7200. That'll begin a little bit later on, right after we break. Dan Feinberg is going to join us. He hasn't been with us in a while. He's got a crazy schedule that we'll catch up with him on that. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. He is the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He just got back from Sundance and the TCA press tour. And lots and lots and lots of stuff to talk about with Dan Feinberg. So let's say hello to Ben. Ben, how are you?
Pretty good.
Okay, you're here, and we're going to do some anti-Valentine's Day stuff. This is the first time you've worked the anti-Valentine's Day show.
Yeah, I'm excited.
All right, and in the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Good morning, sir.
How are you, buddy?
Doing very well.
Okay. This is your first. Is this your first? No. No, you did it. You were here last
I'm
year,
I'm aware
right?
of your disdain for the. Hey, by the way, Pamela Jones from the morning news crew, she says she can't wait to listen in because she also hates Valentine's Day.
Oh, good. And there's a lot of us who don't like it. And so, you know, and you'll hear because the people will be participating. Okay. So we'll do that later on. But right now, let's take a break. It's been a while since we talked to our good friend Dan Feinberg. A lot of TV to catch up on. So let's break right now, and then we'll come back with Dan Feinberg. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. Coming up a little bit later on, it's the annual anti-Valentine's Day show. We're going to talk about bad breakups. We're going to play sad songs. I'm going to suggest completely inappropriate movies to watch on Valentine's Day. And we open up the phone lines for you and us to celebrate anti-Valentine's Day as we do every year. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can at Nick D Show, and at Facebook, it's facebook.com/NickDShow. Been a little while since we talked with Dan Feinberg. Schedules were a little crazy, and Dan was super busy, and there's a lot to talk about. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. We got to catch up this week. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and lots to talk about. Let's get Dan on the air. Hey, Dan.
What is the good word, Nick?
Oh, you know how it goes. So you've been very, very busy. Tell everybody you were at Sundance, and then you had another event right after that just ended yesterday, correct?
Basically, I did the 1-2 punch of Sundance right into the TCA Winter Press Tour. So it's been somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 21 nights since I last slept in my own bed.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, it sounds like it's been busy for you. Well, let's talk about the TCA tour. How did that go? That's always a lot of fun, right?
It is indeed a lot of fun. It's a fairly exhausting thing. This was my, I guess, third tour now as president, so I've got one more to go come summer. So the end of my tenure is approaching, but still a little ways off. But no, it was a very, very robust tour. Lots of big stars, lots of interesting panels, lots of stuff to chew on about the state of the industry, I guess.
Okay. All right. Can you give me some of the highlights? Who were some of the celebrities? What were some of the panels like?
Well, for heaven's sakes, we had a panel for HBO where the talent on the stage included Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, and Meryl Streep all at the same time.
Wow.
It was a panel at which people were basically ignoring Laura Dern and David E. Kelly. And that's not the kind of thing that normally happens. So that was pretty big deal. We had a Hulu panel with, and that, by the way, of course, was for the second season of Big Little Lies, which I don't actually know anything about because all we saw was a couple clips from a teaser reel. So
right.
As much as I would love to tell people how the new season looks,
yeah,
I have no clue. I believe it's premiering in June, so it's a long way away, but
right.
They did have all of the actresses on the stage. That was
pretty
cool.
Amazing. That's really amazing. Wow.
It is, and it's it goes to show, once again, just in case anyone was curious or uncertain, just how robust the TV marketplace is, that you can fill a stage with those people. The other day for Hulu and Catch-22, we had George Clooney on the stage. He's a pretty big star, and then a couple minutes later after he was done, we had Dr. Ruth on the stage, and she's a pretty big star of a very different size, but still very well loved and was wonderfully entertaining.
What was she promoting?
She has a new documentary called Ask Dr. Ruth, and it premiered at Sundance. So that's actually one of the several overlapping things between the adventures that I've been having for the past couple weeks. But yeah, so Ask Dr. Ruth, which is it's a fairly run of the mill documentary, but also it's a good reminder of how important Dr. Ruth has been to a certain part of the cultural conversation for 40 years now. And for a generation, she is such an icon. And I think it will be a helpful reminder to some people of why she's interesting, notable, important.
Yeah.
And then there are people who don't know that she was also trained to be a sniper in the Israeli army. So she's a good deal more amusing and complicated than people think.
Let me ask you this. Catch-22 is one of my favorite books of all time.
Indeed.
The film version, I thought was the best that they could do. I like it. But who's creatively behind this Catch-22? And I know that George Clooney is in it.
Yes, Clooney and his frequent producing partner, Grant Heslov, are involved. They are executive producers. They are directors to some degree. Grant Heslov did direct the premiere. I believe that Clooney directed at least one episode later. I believe he was in the process of directing when he was in whatever the strange stunt accident was that caused brief concern, but he seems to be doing quite fine, and he is a man very, very capable of charming an entire room full of critics with rather great ease. The actual creators are David Michaud, Australian filmmaker from Animal Kingdom, and Luke Davies. They're the creators and the writers of the first episode. And Christopher Abbott from Girls is the principal star. He plays Yusarian, but the cast also includes the aforementioned George Clooney, Kyle Chandler, Hugh Laurie, a bunch of pretty big people on one side of the cast, and then a bunch of young actors playing most of the soldiers in
right.
And in the battle, when, as it were.
When does it start streaming?
It premieres in May, I believe, May 17th okay. on Hulu, and it will be one of the ones that they go with the binge model on, as opposed to the week-to-week Handmaid's Tale
good.
Model on.
Okay, good. Good, good, good. Well, I'm interested in that. Again, I just, as I mentioned, I adore that book, so I hope they do a good job with it. So
It is one of my favorites as well, and definitely a book that is very complicated
yes.
to adapt.
Yes, absolutely. All right, well, who else? What are some of the other panels that stand out for you?
Let's see. This afternoon, we had multiple panels with Neil Gaiman because he was here the other day for Starz' American Gods, which will finally be returning for a second season this spring after a fair amount of creative upheaval and delay and whatever. They basically tried repeating over and over again that nothing bad was happening with American Gods. They just had creative differences or something, and Ian McShane insisted several different times that basically the second season gets closer to Neil Gaiman's book, and Neil Gaiman said that the first season was perhaps a little bit more outlandish and outsized and whatever, and that the second season indeed brings things back into the narrative. And then he was back yesterday for Amazon's Good Omens, so he is very busy as TV begins to find a way or a place for him. One of your favorite Saturday Night Live personas, Edie Bryant, has a show on. You're going to have to eat your words on Edie Bryant. That is a prediction.
Okay.
Because her Hulu series Shrill is a really interesting show, and also kind of points to how different the TV model has become in recent years. The idea always used to be that SNL, in the hiatus between seasons, you know, if you were a big star, you could make a movie. If you were a little star, you could make a couple cameos in the big star's movies, basically.
Yeah,
and
right.
this is a 6-episode series that for Hulu that Edie Bryant did and co-created. So it's an interesting show. Lots and lots of stuff. Patricia Arquette looks like she's heading for another Emmy nomination for something called The Act, which is on Hulu. There is so much TV. It is unreal, and it is not slowing down, and it's vaguely terrifying.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It really does. How long was the tour? How many days was that?
Well, it overlapped with the end of Sundance. So basically, I went to Sundance on the 24th of January, about a million years ago. I was at Sundance until the 30th, and press tour started on the 29th, so I missed 2 days. I missed the NBC day and the CBS day, and I arrived in time for the CW and then a bunch of PBS. FX had a busy day. This was, so long ago, but we had things like Michelle Williams and Sam Rockwell were there to tease Fosse Verdon,
I'm so excited about that. I can't stand it. I'm so excited about that. When does that one premiere?
That premieres, I believe, April, and they're still in production on it, which is not necessarily the way that they usually go on these
right,
things. So,
right. Was Pamela Adlon there?
Pamela Adlon was there indeed for the new season of Better Things, which I've seen 3 episodes of.
I can't wait.
It's very, very good. Ugh. You will not feel notably as if a beat has been skipped in the absence of Louis C.K. They
yeah.
have a 4-person writing team, basically, and she directed every episode and co-wrote many of the episodes, but not all of the episodes. A couple of the episodes are exclusively written by the people from the writing team, and again, you don't notice a difference.
Wow, that's great. I'm so glad that FX decided to bring it back. I really would have been sad if you know, that show had been affected by the whole Louis C.K. scandal or canceled because of it, because it's such a great show and she's so talented.
I completely agree. So that's among the many things. Were you a big fan of the What We Do in the Shadows
movie? Oh my God, yes.
Well,
I can't wait for the sequel. I cannot wait.
FX has a series version of it coming.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that you need to, there's unreal how much TV there is.
Yeah,
and
true.
So going back to your original question on this, basically the press tour lasted from the 29th to the 13th. Yeah. And I was there from the 31st to the 13th, which felt like 20, all things considered.
Yeah, it's a lot. Okay, Dan, hang on, all right?
Sure.
Okay, Dan Feinberg is with us. Lots of TV to talk about. He's had a busy month here, and he is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at TheFineprint, F-I-E-N. We got a break for the news. When we come back, more with Dan, more TV talk after. Welcome back. How you doing, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. In just a little bit, our anti-Valentine's Day, annual anti-Valentine's show is going to start. We're going to talk about breakups and sad things and play some sad music, talk about movies that are absolutely inappropriate to watch on Valentine's Day, and we want to share insane breakup stories as well. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Right now, though, Dan Feinberg is with us. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much, Nick.
Now you missed some stuff while you were away, and I know that you weren't planning on watching Big Brother, but it did end last night. The finale happened,
and was it everything you dreamed it would be?
Because I don't want to give anything away for people who haven't watched it yet, and it's on their DVR, so I don't want to give away who the winner is or any of that stuff. Let me just say that I was kind of satisfied, and I was happy. I was happy who the viewers chose, you know, how you get the favorite house guest award.
Sure.
I was very happy about that. Now I've just made that obvious as to who I was happy about getting it. But I don't want to give anything away. It was, you know, they had a twist. Did you hear what they did with Scaramucci?
No, absolutely nothing. All I know is that he was gone after the second episode. I don't know what happened, though.
No, he was there. What happened was he was there for 6 days, but technically he wasn't a real guest. They did a twist on it. So he voluntarily left because he wasn't a real guest. He only stayed for like 6 days. They did a twist that became a competition. So he didn't vote, you know, on the jury or anything like that. Nobody voted him out. He played the game for a little bit, and then they pulled the twist because he had so much stuff going on in his real life, he could only commit to 6 days.
So what a bunch of utter nonsense.
I know. I totally agree. And then they tried to turn it into the Scaramucci twist, which turned into a competition, an HOH competition. So that was absurd. But, you know, for the most part, it was, you know, it was fine. I enjoyed the last Celebrity season more. You know, my favorite celebrity, the only one that I really, really cared about was Tom Green. And he was the absolute, without question, most entertaining thing on the show. Without question. He was really funny, and he was really good at competitions. But he was by far the only reason that I was happy to watch that show was because of him. And he dominated the show. He was so funny. There was, like, anytime he was in the diary room, it was hysterical. And what he was doing in the middle of the night was all this weird Tom Green kind of stuff while everybody's asleep. It was very funny. So he was entertaining. And then after he got booted, which people know that already because he got ousted a couple of a few episodes ago, it became much less entertaining. So.
Okay, you have me angry now about the idiotic Scaramucci twist.
Yeah.
That's beyond offensive. I did watch the first episode. I watched that because, I don't know, because
yeah.
It was on and
yeah.
I wasn't anywhere else yet. But somehow the excitement of the Scaramucci twist did not penetrate into my Sundance TCA bubble, and I can't say that I'm unhappy about that.
It was very aggravating. It was like, come on, give me a break. You know, And he showed up, you know, last night at the finale and reunited with everybody. And anyway, but it was. I mean, I watched it. I wasn't very excited about it, especially after Tom Green got evicted. Anyway, now the Masked Singer. Have you missed the Masked Singer? Are you all caught up? I'm assuming you've probably missed all the episodes since we last talked.
I have missed two of the three episodes, but the third one, which was last week's episode, coincided with Fox's TCA day, and so they had a screening in the ballroom and then brought out the eliminated contestants to come do an interview. Since it's been a week, I suppose it's probably okay to say that it was Ricky Lake.
It was Ricky Lake, I didn't watch last night's episode. I'm going to watch it when I get home in the morning. I chose to watch the other dumb reality show, Big Brother, because they were on at the same time. Ricky Lake. And by the way, I guessed that one immediately. I got Ricky Lake immediately.
I don't know if I did, but like I said, they did a Q&A with Ricky Lake, and then with all of the judges and producers. And so, if nothing else, I did get to ask the producers what the point of it all was, and that was a good opportunity to actually find out what anybody was competing for. They were amused in the sense that apparently nobody had ever at any point thought to inquire about this.
they get a trophy.
No one has ever cared.
They get a trophy.
There's a masked trophy.
Right,
and that's what it is they're playing for. And that was all.
That show is so ridiculous on every level, man. I can't stop watching it. I still feel the same way about it as I did. Has not worn out on me. I'm absolutely entertained every time I watch an episode of that show, and I'm thrilled it got renewed for a second season. So.
And I think it's going to be very interesting to see whether they actually can get a higher caliber of talent for the second season, or if the kind of enhanced spotlight on the show that, you know, they will not be able to shoot it as entirely on the sly as they did the first time around.
Right.
If the enhanced profile makes it impossible to get any bigger talent, and if it really and truly just does become kind of a second-rate Dancing with the Stars in Masks celebrity competition, which I feel like to some degree it really has turned out to be. I think once you begin to step back and look at the talent involved, it's a certain caliber of talent I think is below what they were initially advertising it as being.
Oh yeah, no, there's no question about it. There's no question about it. I will say this: I enjoyed Joel McHale and his two appearances as a guest judge, and on last night's show, which I'm going to watch in the morning, JB Smoove was a guest judge, so that's going to be great.
He probably will be amusing. Also, I wish the main judging crew was better, but. Yeah. Oh, well, it's not about them, apparently.
No. All right. Well, listen, now we covered TCA. The tip of the iceberg because there was so much to cover. By the way, what else did HBO showcase besides Big Little Lies?
Let's see. HBO, they left out a bunch of things. So they were not able to do a Game of Thrones send-off panel, which was a pretty big disappointment for the room, basically.
Yeah.
The way they looked at it was that they were just... They figured it would be an entire panel of people trying to get spoilers that no one could give them, which I don't think is really true. We're professional reporters. We can ask other things, but whatever. So, yeah, we also got a panel for the season, which we haven't seen. We've basically only seen a clip package, which was very funny. And so we had a panel with Julie Louis-Dreyfus on Satellite from Austria with a strange 2 to 3 second lag that kind of enhanced the comic timing, but also kind of made it impossible to have a conversation.
Yeah.
And then with Dave Mantel, the showrunner, and you know, they were very funny. And I assume that probably the final season of Veep is going to be very funny because they have not had any detours. Apparently, it's going to be a fairly short season. It's only 7 episodes. You know,
that's a little
see, but now you at least have your expectations in line.
Yeah,
and that's important. Now you know, and that's okay. What else did we have? We had, let's see, HBO has a documentary series, The Case Against Adnan Syed, which is director Amy Berg's kind of continuation of Serial, basically. It kind of picks up with the post-Serial appeals and backtracks to explore the case that was the basis for the first season of Serial. And so we had several of the principals from that and from Serial as well. So, you know, Serial fans will know names like Rabia Chowdhury and Asia McClain, who were very important to the first Serial season. And so that was interesting. We had a panel for the Alex Gibney Theranos documentary, The Inventor Out for Blood in Silicon Valley, which I saw at Sundance. It was one of the opening night documentaries, and it's an Alex Gibney documentary.
Okay.
So, you know, people who know Alex Gibney know that he does very, very solid work. He does reliable 3-star documentaries out of 4. You know, very rarely are they mind blowing and artistically astounding, but they're almost never bad. And that's a good track record.
Yeah.
So those were sort of the basis of the HBO panel.
Now I'm assuming, you know, because you've been away. Did you watch Crashing? Have you watched Crashing?
I did not get to last season at all. And God, does it actually premiere? In the past couple of weeks.
No, we're on to like episode. I think Sunday will be episode 5 of the.
Serious?
Yeah, four or five, it's either 4 or 5, and it's just as good as it was last season, if not better. I really like that show a lot. I really do, and I love that they get like so many great stand-ups to be in it, and I think it's great. I think Pete Holmes is really terrific, and I really have grown to really enjoy that show a lot.
Have you been watching the new True Detective season or not?
Nope. I'm saving all that. I'm going to watch. I'm going to binge on that. But it's all on my DVR. So.
Huh? Why is that your strategy?
Because I hated, you know, when True Detective the season one, not season two so much, but season one, I hated that I had to wait a week, you know, because it was such a great show. And I hear that this season is phenomenal, Mahershala Ali is just all over the place. I mean, my God, and deservedly so. But I'm just going to wait. I'm going to wait till it's all done, so I don't have to wait in between weeks, because I hear that this is stellar stuff. So
I would tell you to temper your expectations.
Oh, okay.
Rather, honestly.
Okay. All right. Well, I will do that.
Phenomenal to me sounds like a fairly wild overstatement. I think that Mahershala Ali is great.
Yeah.
And that is the full extent I will go.
Okay.
But. Oh boy! I think if you're looking for phenomenal,
okay. Well, I'm glad
I will be interested in hearing.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you told me, but I will catch up on it. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us. We got a lot more TV to talk about, and we will also talk about his time that he spent in Sundance. Lots of reviews of stuff that he wrote about during his Sundance visit, and we have much more TV to talk about with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at TheFineprint, FIEN, and we'll return right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, and we're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. Right now, we're talking with Dan Feinberg. Dan's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. Let's welcome Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much.
All right. Well, we covered TCA. Now let's talk a little bit about some of the stuff that you saw at Sundance. And you did a bunch of reviews. Let's start right here with Hannah. Now this is you reviewed this before you went to Sundance, correct?
No, Hannah is it premiered at Berlin.
Oh.
So it is. I did not get to go to Berlin yesterday, so
okay.
I was able to review this one from Pasadena. But yes, Hannah premiered its first 2 episodes at the Berlin Film Festival for reasons that I don't entirely understand.
It's a little strange, yeah.
The basic is that Hannah is an adaptation of the Joe Wright movie, which starred Saoirse Ronan and Cate Blanchett and Eric Bana, if memory serves.
Yep.
Does that sound right?
It
can't
does.
Keep up.
Yep.
And the new series is created by David Farr, who was one of the co-writers on the movie. And best as I can tell, this is David Farr's way of saying, look, when Joe Wright got his hands on Hannah, he went off and did crazy Joe Wright things, and it became not really exactly what I wrote, and so I took back the property, and I'm doing my version. And he was actually a press tour yesterday or the day before and for Amazon's day, and he pretty much said that. It wasn't like he said, oh, the movie was some horrible thing that was taken out of my hands. It was basically, he said, look, Joe Wright is... I'm not tour. Joe Wright is arty. Joe Wright does what he wanted, and he basically kept calling me on the phone and saying, look, I'm taking out this part of your story because it's not useful for what I'm doing.
Mm.
And so the TV series is basically taking the fairy tale elements and the subtext elements and the heavily arty elements out of Hannah and replacing it with more plot and more conventional looking action beats. And to me, that's not the worst thing in the world. It's just not a thing I ever thought I needed, because I liked Hannah an awful lot.
Me too.
The reason I liked Hannah is Joe Wright and the Chemical Brothers score and elements like that. And this is much more conventional. It's not unattractive. It's not slow moving. The cast is fairly solid. The lead is Esme Creed Miles, who is mostly notable for being Samantha Morton's daughter, but, you know, a relatively young British actress who is very good, and she's very good. And the two other main adult roles are The Killing Reunion. Joel Kinnaman plays the Eric Bana part, and Murray Enos plays the Cate Blanchett part, and they're both reasonably serviceable TV equivalents. It's just much more linear, much more straightforward, and as a result, it feels like a thing that you've seen multiple times before, as opposed to Hannah, which felt like you were watching somebody brilliant turn a genre upside down and having kind of fun with it.
Yeah.
And so I think that there are plenty of people out there who are going to think that Hannah the movie was way pretentious and way on the nose with all of its symbolism and folkloric elements. And I think that if you are the kind of viewer who felt, I would have liked Hannah if it had been directed by somebody else, I think that the TV show will serve its purpose. But if you liked Hannah as a Joe Wright film, you'll probably feel like this is fairly conventional.
Okay. I happen to be a huge fan of the movie. And also, I mean, I love Joe Wright. I also think Saoirse Ronan is just... I mean, she's Saoirse Ronan, and she's fantastic.
She is. She's really, really good. One of the frustrations of the TV show that will be a frustration for, you know, 10 viewers, maybe 15, is that Joanna Kulig, who is remarkable in Cold War, should have been nominated for an Oscar. Great movie, Cold War. Have you seen Cold War?
Oh, yeah. And I was really happy to see the director get a nomination, which was one of the big surprises of nomination morning.
But it's such a good movie,
and the fact that she
was not nominated to me is a minor outrage. And she has like this incredibly small supporting role, and she pops up a couple times in the episodes I've seen, and each time she pops up, I went, oh God, give me more of her. Why do they not understand that they have a star in the background there?
And
it's kind of infuriating, actually.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Well, that's Hannah. And that's on Amazon. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the Sundance stuff that you saw. Let's talk about the Jordan Peele executive produced documentary, Lorena, about Lorena Bobbitt. Tell me about that.
That is premiering this Friday, I believe, on Amazon. And it is a 4-hour Jordan Peele produced documentary. I believe the director is actually Joshua Rolfe. And it is... Well, it's somewhat Lorena Bobbitt's take on the story as it of, you know, as people know, she chopped off her husband's penis and threw it out the window of her car.
Yep.
And some people also remember more of the context, largely that she alleged that he had been psychologically battering her and raping her for years, and this was simply the point at which she broke. And yeah, it's somewhat her story, except that for no good reason, John Wayne Bobbitt is also an interviewed talking head in the story. It feels to me like one of those things where they said, look, out of courtesy, we're going to give you the opportunity. Do you want to tell your story? Expecting that he wouldn't. Then he showed up and he didn't say anything interesting, which isn't ideal. The first probably 3 hours are really and truly just rehashing the events and the two trials. There was his trial for sexual assault and rape and her trial for assault, and, you know, not to spoil any of the verdicts, they were 25 years ago, but the fourth episode to me was really the one where it actually gets good, and it goes into, it contextualizes the case in a way that I think is actually important and interesting, and positions the Lorena Bobbitt story alongside the Anita Hill case, alongside Nicole Brown Simpson, alongside a lot of cases in the early to mid-90s that forced people to reckon with the impact of domestic violence in ways that they hadn't been previously, and an assault and harassment and all of these circumstances in which abuses of power turned into physical abuses and laws were literally rewritten in many states. And I think that the fourth episode is the one that maybe does things that are important. There's no reason at all why it needs to be 4 hours. And I think that people who are old enough to remember the case aren't going to be gripped for the first three episodes. It's just a fairly straightforward rehashing. What it does very well is it probably takes her name away from being a punchline, and I think she deserves that, that she deserves to not have people laughing. And there's a lot of emphasis on the nervous laughter that the case created when it happened, and, you know, for logical reasons, but also when you think about the things that she alleged, the fact that John Wayne Bobbitt was on Howard Stern, and Howard Stern was just joking about allegations of rape almost week after week.
Yeah.
It was gross.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe more than anything is where the documentary is important, is it says this was really not a funny thing, and yet we found it funny, and what does that say about us as a culture?
Right.
And
right.
It's interesting, but I don't know that it's mandatory. Like, I would tell people that if they remember the case, you can probably half pay attention to the first couple of episodes and then maybe really pay attention to the fourth one, because that's where it hits home.
Okay. All right. By the way, Jordan Peele is everywhere. How about that? I mean, the Twilight Zone, he's got the movie Us. He's everywhere.
He has a YouTube premium series that I think came out yesterday
Day before. Weird City or Strange City or something like that?
Yeah, I haven't had the chance to watch it or heard anything at all about it, but I do know it exists. Yes, he is. Look, if you're him, you've got to strike while the iron
is hot.
I just wish I had a clearer sense of what it meant for something to be a Jordan Peele production. And I think that we're going to eventually learn what it is, but I think there are going to be a bunch of people confused what his name is doing on Lorena.
Right. I'm not so confused by The Twilight Zone and Us at all.
Oh, no.
You know, but the,
No.
Yeah. So, all right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We got a lot more TV to talk about, and the news is coming up here. And then after the news, we'll jump back in, talk with Dan, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. And again, you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Okay, we shall return after the news. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And We're going to be doing our anti-Valentine's Day show coming up in just a little bit here. We're going to share breakup stories and talk about some sad music, and I'm going to recommend movies that are completely inappropriate to watch on Valentine's Day, because I hate Valentine's Day. Always have. Always will. And we'll do our anti- and we want to open up the phone lines for you guys and text lines if you want to share any of the anti-Valentine's Day sentiment. 312-981-7200. Right now, though, let's get back to our conversation with Dan Feinberg. Joins us every 2 weeks, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's bring Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. Again, we can get back to some of the Sundance stuff, but before we do, you did a review of The Other Two, which is a new comedy on Comedy Central. Where do you stand on that?
Where I stand on it is I think it is a show that is often funny, but I am very aware that it's like a genre of shows that other people find significantly funnier than I do. I watched it frequently thinking that a lot of the comedy of embarrassment and cringing comedy mixed with occasional doses of family heart, to me it felt a lot like Creek, which is a show that I know has passionate and devoted fans and that I can occasionally chuckle at, but that I just don't find as funny as some people do. And I feel the same way about The Other Two. It is absolutely a show that at times made me laugh. At other times, I felt like they were repeating jokes too much. They were over-explaining jokes. There were things about it that kept kind of getting under my skin. But I knew as soon as I watched it that it was a show that some people were going to absolutely love. I am guessing that you are probably going to be in that category.
I am, Dan. I am in that category. I think it's hysterical, and I think the cast is great. And I'm a fan of the writers of this and the creators of this, and I, you know, ever since they, you know, they worked on SNL, and anytime somebody gives Molly Shannon a job, that makes me happy. I'm a fan of it. I think it's very funny.
I think that I think it is a worthwhile show, and I think that when it is good, it really is very, very good. And I think that Molly Shannon is good. I think that a lot of the supporting cast is very well used. I think Ken Marino is well used. I think that Richard Kind is well used. I think that a lot of the little cameos are well done. I like both Drew Tarver and Helaine York. I think it has a lot of very good elements in it. And for people who are enjoying it so far, I do think it gets better as it goes along. I think that it finds ways to sell some of the more serious or semi-dramatic parts of its storytelling, and I think that it shows layers. It also has a couple moments that I thought were brilliant briefly, and then that got kind of undermined by, again, over-explaining the jokes, and that's just a thing that it does. But I think that it does get better. It goes a couple interesting places, and it was renewed a press tour just the other day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a panel for it, and they renewed it on the stage. Everyone was very excited, which is one of our favorite press tour games, where they surprise the cast or creators with a renewal on stage, and they either truly are surprised and shocked and whatever, or else they all pretend very convincingly to be shocked. So they are, after all, actors. But yes, yeah, so it was renewed, and I think the end of the first season sets up an interesting season two.
Okay, cool. And I'm also loving the final season of Broad City. I mean, those two women are just so great.
Oh, God, that is all piled up on my DVR right now. I have got zero episodes. My DVR, and I know this is a favorite game that we play basically every year around this time. My DVR is a nightmare at this moment.
I can imagine. Okay. All right, another Sundance thing that you saw. I'm so excited about this, and I know that you gave it a good review. Tell everybody about State of the Union. I am really, really excited about this.
State of the Union is Sundance Now. No, not Sundance Now. It's Sundance TV. They're all very confusing. Sundance TV is the one that actually appears on your TV. Sundance Now would be the digital service that you would have to pay extra for.
Right.
So it is created by Nick Hornby, who is, of course, awesome, and Nick Hornby. It is directed by Stephen Frears, who, of course, directed High Fidelity and is a great director in his own right. And it is effectively a series of digital shorts starring Rosamund Pike and Chris O'Dowd, and the premise is that They are a couple, long married couple, whose marriage has hit a bump in the road. There was infidelity, and now there are hurt feelings and exposed nerves, and they've decided that they're going to try to salvage their marriage by going to weekly counseling. And each week before going to their counseling appointment, they meet at a bar across the street from the doctor's office and talk over a wine and a beer for 10 minutes to prepare for the counseling session. And so each episode is the 10 minutes before that week's counseling session, as they set the ground rules, as they rehash the pain that was exposed at the previous appointment, as they discuss the idea of where their marriage is at and where their love is at, and what is worth salvaging and what is gone for good and what that means. And it is sometimes bittersweet and beautiful and incredibly perceptive about men and women and relationships. And, you know, it's Nick Hornby at his best in that respect. It's sometimes extremely funny. Chris O'Dowd is very, very funny. And I think that Rosamund Pike, I think she's fantastic. And I think that only occasionally has Hollywood figured out how to actually use Rosamund Pike properly. Yeah. And, you know, she had her Oscar for Gone Girl, and that's good. But she is such a smart actress, and she is such a funny actress, and there's just great chemistry between them. And yeah, it's just really appealing. They have not yet decided how it's going to air, and I'm really curious about that. It premiered at Sundance basically all together, so 100 minutes back to back. I don't think that's the way it should premiere. It's not a movie, and each individual episode goes by really, really fast. But the whole, when you watch it over 100 minutes, it has a drag that I don't think is intentional or ideal. And I don't know what the right way to for it to air is. I asked Nick Hornby about it at press tour, where he appeared via satellite, and he didn't have an answer. He suggested that maybe 2 50-minute chunks might be the right way. And so far, Sundance TV has not said how they plan on airing it. But it's really good, and just watching these two actors bounce off each other, their chemistry is fantastic, and it's mostly a pleasure to watch.
That's great. That's great to hear. All right, let's talk a little bit about Fox's Rent, and for people who maybe didn't see it, which I didn't, something happened, and it wasn't live, and an ankle got broken, and tell everybody what the deal is there. The main question, Dan, is now they've canceled the live hair show that they were going to do, the performance they were going to do. And is this, because of this, what happened with Rent, is this going to put a kibosh on these live musicals that have been happening on TV?
I think it's going to cause everyone pause. NBC has had issues with their selection of their live productions to begin with. They planned on doing a live production of A Few Good Men that got put repeatedly on the back burner. They were supposed to do a live production of Bye Bye Birdie with J-Lo that got put on the back burner. They had this production of Hair that was supposed to go live this summer or this late spring, and it got pulled entirely. I think Hair was probably always a questionable choice because it's simultaneously a musical that has all of these strangely mature and adult moments, and then is also incredibly dated.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they thought they were going to reconcile those things and make it into families were not going to gather together really to watch Hair in 2019. So
yeah,
I don't think it was ever really a good idea. But then they saw both what Fox had to do to occasionally change the lyrics and contents of Rent for no particular reason. And also then they saw the ratings for Rent. And I think the ratings for Rent were not really all that good, and or even, depending on one's interpretation, straight up bad. And yeah, I think it probably put a chill. I think that people are going to have to look to figure out what the mainstream musicals are that people actually want to tune into.
Yeah.
And Rent, it just ended up, unfortunately, being a mess. Brendan Hunt hurt his ankle or broke his whatever in the dress rehearsal, and that was bad, except that they'd been filming the dress rehearsal already just in case, so that was good. But unlike nearly every live production of anything that takes place anywhere in the country, they didn't have understudies. And this remains baffling to me. Because Brennan Hunt is not a sufficient enough star that if he can't do it, the show has to stop.
Yeah.
And they kept making these big statements about how the show must go on, when what they did proved the exact opposite of
right.
that. They showed a canned dress rehearsal performance.
Yeah.
You know, I was only a high school actor. I was not a professional actor. But I know that you don't go 100% necessarily in a dress rehearsal.
Yeah.
You leave something on the table.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and you could see that in a lot of the performances. It was disappointing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I had friends who watched it. I'm not a particularly big fan of Rent, so that's why I didn't.
Me neither.
That's why I didn't watch it. It's not one of my favorite musicals. I mean, I love the Seasons of Love very much. I think that's a great song and a great way to open a second act. But I was never a big fan of it, so I wasn't going to watch it. But when I heard that they showed like the dress rehearsal and the guy broke his ankle, I was like, man, that's just not cool. And it makes no sense that there were no understudies. You're absolutely right, Dan. It makes no sense. I had done theater for many, many years here, directing and acting and all kinds of stuff. Never did we do a show without at least one or two understudies who knew the parts. It's just, you don't do that. So,
and it is a production that has an ensemble. There are background performers.
Right, right.
I don't understand how those people were not prepared
exactly.
to go in if they needed to.
Exactly.
And it's too bad. There were good performances in it, though. There were. Vanessa Hudgens was great. Kiersey Clemons was great. Brandon Victor Dixon, who was also the standout in Jesus Christ Superstar NBC.
Yeah.
He's remarkable.
Yeah. So there was stuff in there. Okay. All right, Dan, get to your DVR.
I don't know what to do. I am looking forward to catching up on 4 weeks of Top Chef, though.
I'm
looking forward.
It's been a great season. I'm really enjoying it. And the thing is, I don't hate anybody on the show. That's very unusual. I don't hate any of the chef testants. So, all right, Dan,
we'll something to look forward to.
There you go. And it's been really strong, very, very strong season. So you'll enjoy that. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for the Hollywood Reporter. Dan, we will talk to you in a couple of weeks. Okay, Dan.
Sounds good, Nick.
Okay, man. Welcome back.
Thanks.
All right, there you go. Dan Feinberg is exhausted. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. We'll take a break. When we come back, we begin our annual anti-Valentine's Day show.
Love stinks. Love stinks.
All right. It's time for the annual anti-Valentine's Day show. And we want to share our stories of bad dates and bad breakups. And we're going to talk about talk and play some sad songs. And I'm going to recommend a little bit later on, I'm going to recommend some anti-Valentine's Day movies. So we would love to hear from you with your stories about breakups or bad dates. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. How many years have I been doing this now? Since 1998. This will be the 22nd? 22nd annual anti-Valentine's Day show. So, there you go. And we're going to share some real stories that people have shared on the intranets. And we also want to share some real stories from you, terrible dates that you've gone on and breakups that you've gone through. And we'll talk about some songs too that we will listen to parts of. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. You know, I got to tell you, Ben, I've been the person who I have to tell this story. You've never heard it, I'm sure, but I know that a lot of the listeners have. This is true. I was a really terrible first date for a specific girl.
Oh no!
Because I took her to see the movie Dead Ringers. Now I don't know if you I don't know if you're familiar with Dead Ringers.
I'm not.
Okay, it's a David Cronenberg movie. That's the first flag.
Okay.
Secondly, it's Jeremy Irons, who is brilliant in it. He plays twins. He plays twin gynecologists who are drug addicted and have invented very strange tools to use on their patients.
Okay.
And I took a girl to see that movie on a first date. And I just described to you what it's about. So it's a David Cronenberg movie about twin gynecologists who are on drugs and invent tools for women that they work on as gynecologists. So not a good first date at all. This is not a. In fact, it's a great anti-Valentine's Day movie. I mean, if we want to jump right into that, I highly recommend watching Dead Ringers on Valentine's Day. Highly. But the kicker on this is not only was it stupid of me to take a girl that I just met on a first date to see a David Cronenberg movie about drug-addicted twin gynecologists, I had already seen it.
Oh, no.
So, in my young, idiotic mind, you know, I was like 23 when that movie came out, probably.
Okay.
So I was young and I was an idiot. And so I thought it was a test. I thought it was like some kind of test. I thought to myself, you know, if this girl's really cool, she'll like this movie. And it's such a jerk thing to do and to think. Like, it's at first, you know, I met her, I liked her, we got along really well. We were both attracted to each other, and it was all nice, it was all good. And then finally, I was like, let's go see a movie. And so I chose Dead Ringers, which I had already seen. And in my mind, it was like, this is a test. If this girl enjoys Dead Ringers, then she's cool.
Okay.
And she hated it and was appalled that I took her to see it. We didn't go on a second date. I just remember her face during the movie and then after the movie. And I was like, hey, what'd you think? Wasn't it great? And she's like, no, it wasn't great. And I can't believe you took me to see this movie on a first date. And then I was thinking to myself, well, she didn't pass the test because a cool chick would like Dead Ringers.
Yeah.
So I took her home, never talked to her again. So I was a really bad first date. And I realized that in retrospect. But at the time, I was like, well, man, forget her. She doesn't appreciate a good David Cronenberg movie. Then I got nothing to say.
Yep.
And I thought it would be okay because I took a first date to see another David Cronenberg movie. And that one turned out great. I mean, we only dated for like 6-7 months. But the first movie I took this other girl to see was 2 years earlier. I took her to see The Fly.
Oh, okay.
And so with Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis, which in my opinion is a love story, you know, and the kind of love story that I really enjoy and actually very emotional. It's also incredibly gross. Have you seen The Fly?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's incredibly gross and it's, you know, but I took this girl to see it and she loved it. She thought it was great. She also thought it was romantic. But that one only lasted 7 months. So I thought, you know, I've already taken one girl to see a David Cronenberg movie that turned out to be a success. Why not take this girl to see Dead Ringers? Didn't work. So there, that's the other side of the bad date right there. Me. Okay, we have to break. We want to hear from you guys. It's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Bad dates, bad breakups, anti-Valentine's Day. That's what we're doing. 312-981-7200. Playing the uplifting songs this morning. Anti-Valentine's Day, that's what it is. 312-981-7200. We want to hear from you. Talk or text, 312-981-7200. We got some texts coming in, and we want to hear your stories about really bad dates or breakups. And we got a website that picks some of the saddest and most sad breakup songs, and No Doubts, Don't Speak. Here's what they say about it. This crushing banger, co-written by siblings Eric and Gwen Stefani, was fueled by the No Doubt frontwoman's breakup with bandmate Tony Cannell. It's featured on the group's third record, Tragic Kingdom, reaching the top of the charts across the globe and propelling them to stardom. But it all stemmed from heartache. Originally, a swoonier love ditty with different lyrics. The breakup between Gwen and Cannell meant that Don't Speak took a different route entirely. It used to be a more upbeat song, a 70s-type rock thing, Gwen said to The Independent. But when Tony and I broke up, it turned into a sad song. So there we go. That's the first of our sad breakup songs that we'll be playing. And of course, we played "Love Stinks" by Jay Giles, which is a great song. So we got some texts here. 773 area code. Dear Nick, I was in divorce court on Valentine's Day. Enough said. Thanks. That's pretty amazing that your divorce court date is on Valentine's Day. I wonder how many people have had to go to divorce court on Valentine's Day. Let's see. 574 says it's Happy Singleness Awareness Day, Nick. Singles Awareness Day. Oh, Singles Awareness Day. I fit into that category. Yeah. One inappropriate movie for Valentine's Day from the 708 area code says, I spit on your grave. Yes, that certainly is, to say the least, certainly is inappropriate. I spit on your grave. Either version, the original or the remake. 815 area code says, hey, Nick, just a reminder, 90 years ago today, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre occurred. Not a bad movie, but it was also on Thursday at around 10:45 a.m., and I just watched it. All right. Valentine's Day Massacre. Here are a few stories. I want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here's a story from someone, a Reddit user. This guy I dated in high school was such a jerk when he dumped me. He'd gone away over spring break, and when he came back, he called me and said that he had to see me. My parents weren't home, so I would either have to walk to his house or ride my bike. He lived 2 miles away up a really steep hill. He kept insisting that I come over, so I got on my bike. The hill was so steep that I actually fell off my bike, hurt my ankle, and could not get back on. I was exhausted, thirsty, and sweaty by the time I reached his house. And I was ready to talk, but he wanted to go for a walk. I gulped down a glass of water, and then we went for the walk. He walked into the center of town, which was fully crowded, and he dumped me right in the middle of the crowded town. He went on and on about how he loved me, but he wasn't, quote, in love with me. And then he turned around and walked away from me and walked home. I walked back to his house, got my bike, walked my bike back home 2 miles. That's pretty terrible. That is pretty terrible. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's see. Here's Steve on WGN. Hey, Steve.
Yeah, I don't know if I told you this before, but this a while back. But I took a girl out on a date. She wanted to go out on a date, so I took her out for Valentine's Day. And I was trying to, you know, end it. So I put her on the 36 Broadway. We got on the 36 Broadway bus, went up to the 300. This is in the 80s before it was remodeled. And went and saw Sid and Nancy. And then I took her to White Hen Pantry for dinner.
Wow. Wow.
And
okay,
we
so
never
is
dated
Sid,
again.
Sid. No, I can understand why. Sid and Nancy in the White Hen Pantry. You're a class act, Steve.
It worked.
Yeah, okay. Very good. Okay, thank you, Steve.
Hey.
Wow, that's terrible. Oh, man, I broke up with a girl. You know, a listener texted this in. I really hope that you tell the story about how you broke up with a girl and then ate your food while she was crying. Yeah, I did. I broke up with this girl. We dated about 8 months, and I really, you know, we had a really fun time together. It's just that there wasn't much to it than just like the physical thing, because physically we were good in that department, but really didn't have a lot in common outside of that. I mean, and it lasted about 8 months, and I think it should have lasted maybe about a month. But we were very attracted to one another. She was really, really beautiful, and I was blinded by how hot she was. But then finally I realized I had to break up with her. And so we're standing on her porch, and she lived on Ashland, right near Grace and Ashland. We met at Ginger's Ale House. That's how we met. There was a regular there, and I bartended there, and that's where we met. And it's amazing how many women in my life I've met at bars. It really is amazing. Which really is not a good thing. Actually, I know people go out to bars to meet other people. It just never really, it never worked out for me. So Anyway, so we had dated a while, and then I knew it was time. I didn't want to stretch it out any longer, and so I was like, we need to talk, and we were on her front porch, but I didn't eat all day. And so I was starving, and so we were. She used to lived right on Ashland there, right next to. Actually, there was a White Hen Pantry that used to be there. She was on the other side of that first house on the other side of the White Hen Pantry, about a half a block away from the corner of Grace and Ashland, where Ginger's is or was. So we end up breaking up. Okay. And I break up with her, and she's upset, and I'm like, look, and she's like, let's, and I said, look, I have to get something to eat. And it was kind of late, and she lived right across the street from Pepe's. There was a Pepe's Taco right across, Pepe's Tacos right across the street. And so I'm like, I have to eat, and I'm going to Pepe's. And she's like, I'll come with you. And I'm like, no, you don't have to. She's like, no, I want to talk. And I'm like, okay. So we go to Pepe's, and I order food, and she doesn't want anything to eat. She just gets a drink. And she starts talking, she starts crying, and I'm down in a burrito at that point. And I know that's a very jerky thing to do, but seriously, I was starving. I was really starving. So yeah, we were sitting in Pepe's, I'm eating my Mexican food, she's crying. I think the other people in the restaurant, wasn't a lot of people in the restaurant, I think the other people in the restaurant were like, what the hell is going on here? Yeah, so that was, again, I was in my 20s, so... Oh, man. Anyway. So, yeah. All right. Let's see. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you would like to join us with your thoughts and your stories about bad dates and bad breakups, here's another bad breakup from Reddit. A buddy of mine had been dating this girl for about 2 years when she just disappeared. We couldn't track her down. Her parents hadn't heard from her. They didn't know where she was. So anyway, about 3 months had passed. My buddy was well on his way to getting over this ex by chatting up this chick at a bar one night. About the time that he was going to ask this girl out, his ex walked up out of nowhere, and the girl he was chatting up introduced his ex as her girlfriend. She's gone for, she just disappears, doesn't hear from her, 3 months go by, and she's got a girlfriend. And not only that, but a girlfriend that her ex-boyfriend was hitting on. That's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. So, I got this list here of songs, Ben. Now, I'm not familiar. I know that Taylor Swift has written 8,000 songs about ex-boyfriends. I mean, that's like her thing. I'm not a Taylor Swift fan. I think she's, I think she's fine, and she's in, and she's pretty, and she obviously is very successful. And I will say this, years ago when she first hit the scene, when she was like sort of a country artist,
yeah,
and she hosted SNL. She was host and musical guest. She was great, and I loved her on SNL. I thought she did a great job. But I'm not familiar with her songs. Now, there's this song, Forever and Always.
Yeah.
I don't know this. Let's hear a little bit of this.
Was I out of line? Did I say something way too honest? Made you run?
So this still has a little... What is this? What year? Do we know what year this was? Because this still sounds a little country-ish, doesn't it sound like? Because she's not country at all now.
No, not at all. She started shifting everything up a
little
bit.
Well, she's like sort of... She was pop, R&B. She needed a little hip-hop thrown in there. But that still had a kind of a country twang to it. Tyler Swift's reputation as a spurned lover precedes her with breakup songs piled precariously high in her arsenal. Whether any of that is a PR maneuver or in the dark scarcely matters, Swift might be painted as the jiltiest of jilted parties, but she objectively an absolute don when it comes to heartbreak anthems. There are countless tales set to music, particularly in her countryer days, and Forever and Always hits the rawest nerve. With the breaking up of Joe. Oh, this one's about Joe Jonas. Now, I know she's dated some famous people.
Well, that makes sense because I just saw it came out in 2008.
So it's a 2008 song.
Yep.
It's about watching somebody fade away in a relationship, she's told the LA Times. They said that they were going to be with you forever and that they loved you, and then something changed in the relationship, And you don't know what it is, but you're watching them slowly drift. That emotion of rejection for me usually starts out sad, and then I get mad. This song starts out pretty, with a pretty melody that's easy to sing along with, and in the end, I'm basically screaming because I'm so mad, and I'm really proud of that. For his part, Jonas has been a bit of a patronizing ass, saying in 2009 that the song is, quote, flattering. It's always nice to hear the other side of the story. Oh, man. Yeah.
Wow.
So, Joe Jonas, did she write any songs about the werewolf from Twilight? Because she dated that dude. How do you date someone? How do you date someone with your name, with your the same name?
Yeah, that's weird.
I will. No, you know what? I did. I dated a Nikki. I did. She was Nicole, okay. But she went by Nikki. I did. But I mean, we don't have the exact same name, you know? Like, but you,
yeah.
Taylor and Taylor. But I don't know if she wrote a song about Wolfman Jack from the Twilight movies. Wow.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
I'm glad. I don't think I'm going to have that problem.
No, I don't think.
I would hope
I don't think there's going to be a Benjamin. Is your full name Benjamin? Yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, how about this before we break? Morning of my first A-level exam. For non-UK people, this dictates whether you get into university or not. And you take them between the ages of 17 and 18. She walked right up to me outside the exam, told me that we were breaking up, and then walked off. It was very hard to focus on physics equations when you're having an emotional breakdown. Oh, man. That's another thing. The timing of breakups, you know? Yeah. So, it's never good. I mean, obviously, breakups are... There's never a good time for breakups, but there certainly is some bad timing.
Oh, yeah.
For breakups. So,
yeah.
Okay. All right, let's take a break. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. It's the Anti-Valentine's Day show. We're going to hear some more breakup stories. We want to hear bad date stories. We're going to play some sad songs and hear the stories behind them. And then later on, we'll give you some suggestions for Anti-Valentine Day movies. All right? Okay. 312-981-7200. Talk and text. Anti-Valentine's Day continues after this.
Yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly.
Whose version of this? Do we know who this is?
I need to double check.
It's not the Beatles,
yeah,
I know that much.
It's not, but it's labeled as.
That's because they, you know what? A lot of the Beatles music's not available online.
Yeah.
But this song has been covered 75,000 times.
Yeah.
It was written in 1966. Of course, that's the Beatles with Yesterday. It's the Anti-Valentine's Day show, and we want to hear bad date stories, bad breakup stories. Do you have favorite sad songs that you like to listen to when you wallow in sadness after a breakup? 312-981-7200. It's the annual Anti-Valentine's Day show. Coming up, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. Written in 1966, released in 1966, here's what they say. Sometimes simple lyrics is all you need. Though the working title was Scrambled Eggs, which is true. That was the working title of the song, Scrambled Eggs. Paul McCartney and John Lennon eventually rewrote the song to feature the story we know now. The guitar and violin duet lifts the lyrics to a more emotional state. Why did she go? I don't know. She wouldn't say. I said something wrong. Now I long for yesterday. Fantastic song.
That was the Ab Fab Party Band.
Okay.
And these guys must be connected somehow, because I found that one on YouTube. But this version of it has 8.2 million views.
Wow.
It's up there.
Okay. So there it is. All right.
They must be doing something right.
They must be. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's another Reddit user breakup story. I was seeing a girl in college, and we actually lived quite close to each other, so we'd see each other a little over the summer. I'd been at her house. I met her parents, et cetera. We did all that stuff. Then she went away on a trip with the college choir. Her phone wasn't working while she was away, so I decided to surprise her at the airport when she got back. Oh, no. You know, be all romantic and stuff. So I'm waiting at the airport arrivals lounge, and I see a couple of faces that I recognize from college filter through, and then she walks through. I start to walk towards her, and then I realize that she's holding hands with one of my high school friends that also went to my college and happened to go on that trip with her. I'm not stupid. I quickly realize what's going on, but by this point, her dad has already seen me, walked up to me, and started a conversation with me. He offers me a ride home with her and said, he also says, oh, yes, I think that guy is coming along with us, too. But I'm not sure that the three of you could fit in the back. Oh, my God. By this point, I'm reasonably sure that I'm going to implode, and it's too late to get away. She's here. He's here. It's awkward. She tells me that we need to talk. I say that we probably don't need to bother. And I walk back to the bus station for my 3-hour bus ride home. It could be worse. He dumped her after 2 weeks, and her parents never forgave her because they thought he was an idiot and they thought I was great. She told them, she then told me that she'd learned a lot in 2 weeks and was much more mature. I moved on. The guy went on to hook up with another one of my ex-girlfriends for a while. I was just concerned that he was on some kind of personal vendetta. That's just kind of weird. That's kind of weird. Dating this guy's two of his ex-girlfriends, or one while it was his girlfriend? Oh, boy. Yeah. Trying to surprise her at the airport. You know, that's probably never a good idea. I don't know why. I don't know. Let's see. Here's Dave on WGN. Hey, Dave.
How you doing, Nick?
All right. What's up?
I had to tell you about my first physical relationship I had. I was a jock in high school, and I was going out with this girl, and my parents were gone, and we were in the bedroom, and I'd have to get up every half inning to watch the White Sox bat, and then eventually, then I'd go back when the other team was up, and then she finally had to break up to me, I wasn't that much into it, you know, and I was a little devastated because, you know, that was almost as good as baseball. You know?
Oh, my God. Well, February 23rd, the Sox come back to this radio station for the season, Dave. Look forward to that, okay?
Okay, man.
All right, take care. Bye. Every half inning, he leaves the bedroom to watch the Sox bat? That's ridiculous. Oh, my God. That is just, I mean, that's crazy. If you're that devoted, just wait till you guys go to the bedroom after the game's over. Wow. So she broke up with him because he was... I got to tell you, look, I'm a sports fan, okay? I love the Hawks. I love the Cubs. And I watch, you know, pretty much every game. But I would never, ever, never, ever do that. Wow. Here's David on WGN. Hi, David.
Hi.
Hi.
I just want to let you know that one of my favorite breakup songs is One More Minute by Weird Al.
One More Minute by Weird Al. All right, we'll have to find that one and play it, and we'll play it, and we'll dedicate it to you a little bit later, okay, David?
Yeah, it's on a 3D album.
Okay.
Weird Al and the album.
All right, we will definitely check that one out. One More Minute by Weird Al Yankovic. Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
All right. Any opportunity to play some Weird Al is always good, because Weird Al rules the planet. But One More Minute. Let's find that one, Ben. Can you find One More Minute by Weird Al? We'll come back after the news with that one. All right, we got some texts coming in. 312-981-7200. Everybody's gone through breakups. Everybody's had bad dates. And it's Valentine's Day, and I think it's time to embrace that, because I hate Valentine's Day. Truly, truly hate it. A little later on, I'm going to recommend some anti-Valentine's Day movies for you to watch. If you're not a Valentine's Day fan and you want to watch movies that are completely inappropriate for a romantic evening of any kind, stay tuned for that. And I'd love your suggestions as well. 312-981-7200. Let's see. 262 area code says, hey, Nick, I got served divorce papers on Valentine's Day. Oh, man. Yeah. You know, the two times I got divorced, that the timing was was not around Valentine's Day. Like, my first wife left me in the month of September. And my second wife, this was really, you want to talk about a nightmare situation. I lived with my second wife, obviously, because she was my wife, in a condo on the north side. And she decided that she wanted to break up with me and get a divorce. And she told me this in right around October. And I couldn't find a place to live, so I lived there until March, staying in the extra bedroom, and then using the kitchen when she wasn't there, using the bathroom when she was. We just avoided each other. It was a nightmare. It was a nightmare, and I had to live there for 6 months like that.
That's rough.
For 6 months. Here's how bad it was. You remember the Groundhog Day horrible snowstorm from 2011? Remember the blizzard?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Our power went out, so I couldn't just sit in the room and watch TV and just be away from it. Our power went out. I went out in that blizzard to go to Ricochet's and drink.
Oh, man.
And I ended up, like, staying at a buddy's house who lived, like, right down the street above the Davis Theater. And so, and then I walked back home. But there was no way I could be in the apartment with no power and with no distraction, with no being in the room. I spent a lot of time in that room watching TV and drinking whiskey. That's pretty much what I did. That entire 6 months is how I lived. Then until I found the apartment that I live in now, and I moved in at the beginning of March. So six months of cohabitation after it was clear she wanted a divorce. Terrible. All right, let's embrace that, though. All right, let's take a break. The news is coming up next.
So I pull your name out of my Rolodex, and I tore all your pictures in two, and I burned down the malt shop where we used to go, just because it reminds me of you. That's right,
that's right.
You ain't gonna see me crying.
I'm glad
that you found somebody new. 'Cause I'd rather spend eternity eating shards of broken glass than spend one more minute with you.
Oh man, I love Weird Al. How is he just not considered a national treasure by everybody?
Yeah, I don't.
Man, oh man, and he just got his. We've talked about this before. He just got his star on the Walk of Fame last year.
Yeah.
How is that? How did he not get one in like 1980? I don't understand.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. That's hilarious. I burned down the malt shop because it reminded me of you.
He's got another one from one of the more recent albums that's all like the really cheesy pickup lines.
Oh man,
it's hilarious.
Well, he's great, Weird Al. There's Weird Al.
One of the best concerts I've ever been to.
I bet I've never seen him live.
I saw him Hard Rock Live when he did the Running with Scissors tour.
Oh man,
and he played for about 3 hours at that show.
No, I know, I know he goes nuts, awesome. And he plays like badass polka, and he plays the hell out of the accordion, and I mean, he just puts on a great show. Everybody I know who has seen Weird Al, just praises the live performance.
It's an awesome, awesome show.
He's great. He's great. All right, there you go. Welcome back, everybody. It's the Anti-Valentine's Day Show here on 720. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We would love to hear from you. Talk or text about bad dates, bad breakups, anti-Valentine's Day stuff. We've got more breakup stories to talk about here. I've got celebrity breakups from each year going back to 1967. What were the biggest celebrity breakups of each year? And a little later on, again, I will tell you about some of the great anti-Valentine Day movies that you should watch. Texts are in. We'll get back to some more breakup stories here from the web as well. 262, wait a second, I'm sorry. 262 area code says, hey, Nick, Jay says, Skid Marks on My Heart by the Go-Go's. People are just busting out some sad songs. My choice for a sad song is Empty Chairs by Don McLean from the album American Pie. 262 area code says a sad song is Ben by Michael Jackson. That song is about a kid and a rat. Ben is a rat. I always thought that was really hilarious that this really sort of like sweet kind of sad ballad that Michael Jackson wrote is about somebody in their relationship with a rat. 301 area code says, it wasn't a first date, but I took a girl to a double feature at the drive-in, and we saw the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Hills Have Eyes. Oh, yeah, baby. That's a double feature. That is a double feature right there. So he took her to see it. She hated it and kept her eyes shut the entire time, and we've been married now for nearly 28 years. That's a great story. Nice happy ending on that one. Very nice happy ending. 773 area code says, my ex is long gone, now married to one of my ex-girlfriends. I still feel like if he was dying in the street, I'd run him over. Oh, man. 847 area code, Trevor in Antioch says, me and my high school girlfriend broke up, and then she had sex with like 9 of my friends. Oh, my God. Ugh. Hey, Nick, what about Warren Zevon's Finishing Touches? Oh, that's a great song. That's a great song. Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show, what about Sylvia's mother? This is Squat sends in his story. Nick, I had a first date with a girl while in high school that went well until I went to kiss her on the lips goodnight, but she closed her legs and broke my glass. Closed her legs and broke my glasses. That's funny. Safe Harbor, great show. That's Squat. All right. Here's Donald on WGN. Hi, Donald.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, my story happened about 3 years ago, around Christmas time, actually. There was a girl. We started a romance back in September. She was from China. She was a lawyer from China, I found out. And she was studying at John Marshall Law School. And she was in the audience when I was singing in the choir. And afterwards, there's meet and greet, and then we hit it off, and we started going out. Well, everything was fine. She said, well, maybe I decide to stay in America, you know. And guess what happened? Well, apparently a boyfriend came from China around Christmas time, and she said, well, no, I'd be his girlfriend.
Oh, like, yeah.
And she said that, and then I got angry, of course, and upset. And then what happened was, I found out when she was leaving in the airport, and she said, no, I don't want you to come because, you know, I don't like that kind of goodbye. So she'd probably done this several times throughout the Western Hemisphere.
Oh, I see. So she was a professional girlfriend breakup artist. Okay. 312-98. Thank you, Donald. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Paul on WGN. Hi, Paul.
Hey. I got a bad story.
Okay.
Okay, I was living with a guy,
mm-hmm.
and things were going bad. I was breaking up, and he didn't take it well, and he had a knife, and he threatened me with the knife and himself. I waited and waited and made things like everything was okay, and so he went to the bathroom. I ran out the door as fast as I could, got into my car. He chased me all the way outside. He jumped on the hood of my car.
Wow.
Grabbed onto the wipers. I put it in gear, got it going about 15 miles per hour, slammed on the brakes. He flew off and landed on the road. And then I did a donut and spun around and took off and never seen him again.
Wow. That's a terrifying story, Paul. That is an absolutely terrifying story. Wow. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's see. What about this one? My last boyfriend broke up with me out of literally nowhere to the point where he came over already knowing he was going to give me the boot. And I spent hours making my world famous spaghetti for him for the first time. He came into my apartment like nothing was wrong, ate not one but two servings of the stuff. We both got ready for bed, and then while romantically spooning, he casually announces he wasn't falling in love with me at all and that we should just cut our losses. But at least he got some spaghetti out of the deal. You know, that's the important thing. Here's Jeff on WGN. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, what's up?
Oh, yes, I have a breakup story myself.
Okay.
Okay, it's this lady that I went to high school with.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we reconnected about 7, 8 years ago. We went to together for about 8 months, and then I found out she cheated on me.
Mm.
And then a couple months later, I found out from one of her cousins that she married the guy.
That's happened in the past. That's happened in the past. I had a girlfriend who cheated on me, and then you know, we broke up and all that stuff. She cheated on me, and then I found out years later the guy that she cheated on me with, she ended up marrying. So, I mean, she loved the guy. That's all I can say. So, Jeff, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's, how about this one? I was dating a guy when I was 18, and it was good. It was a fun time. We were both seeing a bunch of people. It was an open relationship and had been communicated from the beginning. But after a couple of months, I started to get feelings for him, really hard feelings for him. Unfortunately, he started to get feelings for another girl who he was dating. So he came over to break up with me, and he brought brownies to do it, except they were horrible, like very, very bad, inedible brownies. I think it actually softened the blow because I was so offended that someone would offer me something so terrible. Clearly, it wasn't a good catch. So, jeez. Let's see. All right. Let's see. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Look at that. It's Doc. Hey, Doc, with a million miles on his Civic. Hi, Doc.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, man. What's up?
Hey, you got some good press in there, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I read it on the air yesterday. Yesterday morning. Yeah. Well, I read.
Yeah, I didn't go to St. Louis last night, but I am tonight. So it was great. I was really pleased.
Tom Appel. Tom Appel.
Happy anti-Valentine's Day.
Thanks, man.
You know, if you're into acronyms, Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how about Singles Awareness Day? That's just sad.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Singles Awareness Day.
I got a song suggestion for you.
All right.
This one starts, you swear the guy's in love with her, and then it flips totally, and you didn't see it coming. The recently deceased late, great Roy Clark, Thank God and Greyhound, You're Gone.
Oh, that's a great song. That's a great song. That's a great suggestion.
Well, you guys are doing the Lord's work. This is a great show.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it, Doc. Take care, buddy.
Bye.
Bye. And we were telling you about Doc yesterday. Tom Appel, our regular car guy, who was a publisher at Consumer Guide Automotive, wrote a piece about Doc, the guy you just heard in Kansas City. He's got a Honda Civic that is about to cross the million-mile mark on his odometer. And Tom wrote a really cool article about it. You can check it out at the Daily Drive blog at consumerguide.com. And he wrote some really kind words about my show, too, and I appreciate that, Tom. But that's all about Doc. There you go. Roy Clark. Great song. Okay. We got some breakup stuff that we're talking about, breakup stories. We're going to talk about some sad songs and more, and later on, movies. Yeah, there we go. Some anti-Valentine's Day movies. You guys want to jump in? Bad dates, bad breakups, 312-981-7200. And we'll be right back.
But I thought I loved you, and I hoped you would change. So I gritted my teeth and didn't complain. Now you come to me with a simple goodbye. You tell me you're leaving, but you don't tell me why.
Hiya.
Now we're here.
Great song. That's Roy Clark, the late, great Roy Clark. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and it is the annual anti-Valentine's Day show. We're sharing some bad breakups and some bad date stories. 312-981-7200. We're listening to some classic sad songs and breakup songs, and then later on I'm going to suggest some anti-Valentine's Day movies for you to watch. Speaking of movies, I do want to mention this. Every year when we talk about this, I mention our friend Colin Suter. Colin Suter, who is taking a break from reviewing movies with us on Monday mornings. He did it for 19 years or so, 19, 20 years, and he's taking some time off. He's going back to school and doing some other stuff, so he's not going to be reviewing with us on Monday mornings anymore. But Jim Laskowski is filling in for him, and now he's our regular second reviewer along with Eric Childress. Anyway, Colin's also a filmmaker, and he made a documentary And he shot it. I can't even remember. So I think it was about 14 years ago when he started shooting, and it got released in earlier 2008, I think. And it's called Breakup Date, and it's a documentary about. This is what how they describe it: a documentary romantic comedy about the awkward and uncertain time between relationships when one is confronted with the dating world in a culture of speed dating, online dating, and too much choice. So if you want to see it, I'm actually featured in it. I'm one of the people that are featured in the documentary. He's got people from all walks of life talking about their breakups and dating in general. And he goes to a speed dating night at a bar, covers online dating, he goes to an actual place, a cuddle party where people just cuddle each other, which was a real thing. And he made this really entertaining documentary, and I always mention it on Anti-Valentine's Day because it's a good movie to watch. It's called Breakup Date. It is streaming online now. I mean, if you just go to IMDb, it's there. You can watch the whole movie. You just click onto it. So I'm assuming it's all available on YouTube and all that stuff. There's a trailer online as well. So it's called Breakup Date, and our good friend Colin Suter directed it and put it together, and it's really an interesting movie, a fun movie, and a good documentary about relationships and about breaking up and getting back together and all that stuff. And you get to hear me tell the Dead Ringer story. I tell the Dead Ringer story in the movie. You get to see me tell the Dead Ringer story in that movie. In Breakup Date. So Colin Suter's film Breakup Date, I highly recommend that one. All right. 312-981-7200. Here's Mark, who's in Milwaukee on WGN. Hi, Mark.
What a great show.
Thank you.
Really super. I was dating a younger guy. I mean, this is 20 years back. I was just coming out of the closet, blah, blah, blah. He was a dancer. I thought this was going to go to real places, marriage, the whole nine yards, and He and I were going to move in together. He was going to leave his roommate. And then a couple months into it, he breaks the news to me that his roommate is a little bit more than a roommate, husband. But while I'm crying in the car, while he's driving me home, he thanks me because I helped bring them closer together.
That is brutal, Mark.
It was.
That's brutal.
What a knob he was and still is today.
That's good. Mark, thank you for the call.
You're welcome.
All right, buddy. That's funny. Hey, thanks. Well, just for crying in the car. Hey, thanks for, we got closer because of you. That's brutal. Man. Hey, Dan, can you give me a little Sinead O'Connor? Nothing compares to you. This is... I mean, come on, man. This is one of the greatest songs of all time. Now, the interesting thing about this is that obviously everybody knows that Prince wrote Nothing Compares to You, but he wrote it for a band that he put together called The Family. So the original version of this song, and there's a version, Prince also did a version of it as well, but the original version of this song that was written for a band called The Family, and their version is much different than the Sinead O'Connor version and different than the Prince version as well. But yeah, so originally people didn't, I don't think a lot of people, nobody bought the Family album except for me, because in the 80s, I bought anything that Prince was associated with. I was a Prince fanatic.
Really?
Oh my God. And still am. I mean, I was devastated when he died. But I had everything that had his name. He had projects with other artists. He wrote for other. I mean, he wrote a ton of stuff, and you know, put together super groups and all kinds of stuff. And so, of course, I immediately bought the band, the album by The Family, and I thought it was great. But Sinead O'Connor put it right over the top, and of course, the video. I mean, the video is a close up of her face, and she starts crying. It was just that song threw the roof when it came out. Let's hear a little of it.
Yeah.
Such a great song. Such a great song. And her delivery of it is just great. The Irish singer-songwriter's version of Prince's Deep Cut is a prescription-strength tearjerker. It's basically an onion in song form. Nothing Compares to You is beautiful in its simplicity with echoing percussion, the odd piano stab, and spaced-out strings backing O'Connor's perfect delivery. But it wasn't all peachy behind the scenes with the Purple One, who wasn't particularly happy that it was made without him. "I made it without him," O'Connor told Norwegian radio station a few years back. "I'd never met him. He summoned me to his house, and it's foolish to do this as an Irish woman. He said he didn't like me saying bad words in interviews, so I told him to F off."
That's awesome.
He got somewhat violent. "I had to escape out of his house at 5 in the morning. He packed a bigger punch than mine." Now, that's sad to hear. Wow. So... You know when Ben, when Prince passed away, the day after he passed away, have you ever seen the movie called Green Room? It's a thriller with Anton Yelchin is in it, and it's a punk band that plays at this club that's run by neo Nazis led by Patrick Stewart, and they're trapped in the green room, and these crazy neo Nazis are trying to kill them off one by one. It's a fantastic movie.
Okay,
it is a great movie. That movie opened the day after Prince died, and it played exclusively at the Music Box. So I went to the Music Box to see it. And at one point in the movie, because these punk rockers are, you know, they're trying to keep up their tough facade, even though they're terrified, they start to talk about their favorite bands. And they say, earlier in the movie, they're talking about their favorite bands, and they're all picking punk bands and hard bands and metal bands and stuff. But when, you know, when it gets really thick and they start to freak out and their defenses come down, they start saying other bands that aren't, that you know, that aren't hardcore or anything. And Anton Yelchin goes, "Prince, for me, it's Prince." And this was the day after Prince died. The audience applauded. The audience in the theater applauded. It was, and then I posted something on media about, wow, what a great experience to hear the audience just come together and go, aw, and then applaud at the mere mention of Prince's name. Then I get out and I look online, and it was happening across the country, at screenings across the country. People were either cheering or they would cry. It was great. So, all right, let's take a break here. The news is coming up, and then more anti-Valentine's Day stuff. We want to hear from you.
Cause I can make you love me if you don't. You can make your heart feel something it won't. Here in the dark, in these final hours,
you know, I've said this before. I think this is a perfect song. There are some songs that are just perfect. This is one of them.
Yeah, I agree with that.
This is, I mean, seriously, it's one of my all-time favorite songs. It's a beautiful song. And by the way, I can't remember the name of the football player, but an ex-NFL player wrote that song.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah,
I might have to do some
Rick Geezer, who comes on the show periodically to play sports songs, has a collection of songs that are, you know, performed by athletes or managers or people in the world of sport. And I'm trying to remember the name of the football player who wrote that song. And I was blown away when I heard that. When I heard that, like, an NFL player wrote that song, I was like, are you kidding me? So, but I love that song.
I think it was he was a receiver. He was a receiver, and I guess he was writing it about his quarterback. He wouldn't throw him the balls.
That's the backstory to that song.
You know why that? I think that song's like, if you've ever been in that situation, you know, that's it means so much more. You know,
it was Mike Reed.
Mike Reed. Yeah, he was. Mike Reed was the football player, and I mean, to hear that an NFL player wrote that song is just amazing, amazing. And Bonnie Raitt's version of it with Bruce Hornsby's piano, I mean, it's just a heartbreaking. It's a heartbreaking song. Like you said, Vic, if you've ever been in a situation like that, you listen to that song, it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And everybody's been in a situation like that. That's the thing. That's another reason why that song is so beautiful and so powerful. Is that I don't know anybody who's never been in a situation, who's never ever been in a situation where the other person doesn't love them and they love them.
I don't know. I'll bet you there's some people out there that have never experienced that. There's got to be.
Well, good. If they
if they've
never experienced it, then good for them.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Because it's not good. It's not fun. So, Bonnie Raitt's I Can't Make You Love Me was released in 1991. Sometimes it's worth to try again, but Bonnie Raitt knows better. She captured the essence of a loveless relationship in this ballad from the 90s. The words hit close to home with the soft vocals, and that contributes to the feeling of an unbalanced relationship. And this song tells it to you straight. And again, Bruce Hornsby's piano on that is beautiful. Yeah, that's one of my, and not just one of my favorite, not just one of my favorite sort of sad breakup songs, but one of my favorite songs just of any genre in any way. I just think it's one of the great, I think it's one of the best songs ever of all time. So, we're talking about breakups and bad dates and sad songs and all that stuff. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's another, Lola, who's 26, shared online. Basically, when I was 18, I started dating this guy who I just thought was so attractive that I was almost waiting for him to unceremoniously dump me. And he did. instead of going completely going complete ghost, impossible because we worked together, he just stopped texting and hanging out. We had been dating for 3 months, and he told me he loved me. When I asked him what was going on, he said he'd explain it all if I came over to his house, because he was about to fly to Europe. When I got there, he had put my stuff in a Ziploc bag and left it outside for me. Oh, man. Oh. Like jewelry, makeup, all of it, stuff like that, and he wasn't even home. Oh, man. That is brutal. Wow. How about this? Luke, 32. My ex and I were together for a couple of years, and then things went south. We had a huge fight and broke up, but I didn't think it was a serious breakup because we'd broken up a million times before, only to get back together within days. I mean, we lived together. How quickly could we actually split? Incredibly quickly, it seems, this time. His mom flew over and moved him out in secret while I was at work. I got home to an empty apartment except for a framed portrait of his family, which I drunkenly fly-kicked. Just a framed portrait of his family? Oh, man. That's just ridiculous. All right, how about this? A woman named Brooke shared this one. I was dating this guy for 3 years, and things were getting pretty serious. He'd already bought an engagement ring and bought me a promise ring for my 21st birthday. Then things started to get rocky when he told me that he wanted to go to 3 or 4 video game competitions a year. As we were getting more serious, I was thinking about the future and what that money could do, what could go to, and he just wanted to continue to play video games professionally. An hour later, he broke up with me saying, quote, "Video games are my biggest dreams, and it's my biggest opportunity. And this is what I want to do now, and this is who I am." I gave him back all his stuff, and now he won't give me back my Pyrex dish or my T-shirts because he just doesn't want to. It's a breakup all because of video games, but all I want is my Pyrex dish back. Why would this guy want a Pyrex dish if all he does is sit around and play video games? I want my Pyrex. He's not going to give your Pyrex dish back. Oh, man. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Elizabeth on WGN. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
I was just telling him about my sad story. I was 14. He was 18. I thought he was the one, and of course, lost my virginity, and I just kept going with him. And then I told him that I wanted to go to college, and he says, "That means I'll have to go too." No, it should have been a signal, right? No. Okay. He went to DePaul. I thought, well, you got money. I was going to Chicago Teachers College and holding down 2 jobs trying to get through. And then he got drafted. It was the Korean War. They got a war just for me. And he was really angry. Now, I had a brother who survived Bataan Death March in 3 years in a Japanese prison camp. And this creep is telling, I should have known better, right?
Yeah.
Well, I went down to see him at Fort Sheridan, middle of the night, no train, caught a cab that I didn't have money for. Guy tried to proposition me, left me off at the far edge of the city, and I went, made my way home at 3 o'clock in the morning, and when my boyfriend called me again, I said, I can't do this anymore. Click. Within a year, I read about his marriage to this girl that had been in his study group. She was very wealthy. I thought, oh, great. So then, I have a happy ending to the story. I was introduced to my husband, who had a butcher shop in the area, and I told him what had happened when he asked me out for a date. He looked at me and he took out an engagement ring and he says, I was suckered too. He said, you gave it back after 4 months. And he said, don't worry. He says, I want you to go to school. I'll never hurt you. And we'll make it. And you know what? We did. But 6 years after the marriage and 3 children, one was 2 months old, he started having seizures. They checked him out. His pituitary gland had moved over. There was nothing they could do for him. He had a malformation on his brain. Here I was with 3 children under 6 years of age and a husband who thought he was going to die. I know. You know, I just, it was awful. And we had been engaged on Valentine's Day. And when I looked at him, I said, we're going to find somebody who can do something with you. So they just put him on Dilantin. And I said, we're going to make it. And he died 60 years later.
60 years later, wow.
And you know what? I listened to the way you interact with your dad. I remember what my brother had said, you have to go through a little pain in order to enjoy the joy of life. And you are such a sweet guy. I know there's someone out there for you.
No, oh, yeah, well, I'm not looking, Elizabeth, but thank you for sharing your story. I appreciate it.
And I love you.
All right. Thank you, Elizabeth. All right. All right. Let's take a break here, and when we come back, we've got more some breakup stories, some bad date stories. We got songs, and then I'm going to jump into the world of movies. Anti-Valentine's Day movies. There's a lot of them, and we're going to talk about them.
Is it getting better? Or do you feel the same? Will it make it easier on you now? You got someone to blame. You're sad. Won't love. Won't lie. When it's one need in the night, one love, we get to share it. Leaves you, baby, if you don't care.
Oh, man. This is, this song, I got dumped in right around the time Achtung Baby was just come out, the U2 album, which is my favorite U2 album. I was really in love with this girl, and she broke up with me, and this song was on, and One by U2 was on the radio pretty regularly, and I can't even explain to you the number of times that I listened to it over and over and over and over again. And every single time I hear that song, I think of this girl. Yeah. And I was like, oh, my God, I was madly in love with her. And she, it was Leslie Presley. That's who, that was Leslie Presley right around that time. And so I was really, like, I loved her. And so that song makes me think of her every single time I hear it. So, yeah, that's a sad song. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking anti-Valentine's Day stuff with bad dates, bad breakups. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Sad songs. And after the news, we're going to jump into the movies that you should watch for anti-Valentine's Day. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We've got more breakup stories. We just got a ton of texts here from people. Let's go through some of them. We'll get back to some of these other breakup and bad date stories. 815 area code says, Nick broke up with a high school sweetheart in college, had nothing to do on a Sunday. Sister said, why not ask out her friend? And it's been 46 years and four kids and seven grandchildren. Oh, wow. 630 area code said, boy cheated on me, begged to get back together, got back together. He wanted to tattoo our names, and I made him go first and found out he was still cheating, and he got the tat and walked out with no tat. And I walked out with no tat. So now he's got her name tattooed on him. Let's see. 219 says, people think Reasons by Earth, Wind, and Fire is a fuzzy love song. But if you listen to the words, it's about breakup. Yo, that's true. That's true. That's another thing. That's another topic that we can do is like these is songs that don't sound like their lyrics. Like here's one. This is one of my favorite versions of that. Like people misinterpret the song. They think it's like a love. Like I'll give you a couple of examples. Every Breath You Take by the Police.
Oh yeah.
A lot of people are like, oh yeah, they play that at weddings, and it's it's a really romantic. It's about a stalker.
Yeah,
it's about a stalker. That song is and Sting has said that it was about an ex relationship he had with someone and how he was basically obsessed with her, and you know, I mean, it's a lovely, beautiful, you know, composition. It's really, you know, nicely delivered, but that song is about stalking someone, and so people are like, oh yeah, I love that song. Let's have that be our first dance at our wedding. Really, you want to dance to a song about somebody stalking someone?
And those are the weddings I want to be at.
Yeah. And the other one is that this one I just love. There Goes My Hero by Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So that song gets played all the time for like inspirational, like sports stuff, or when someone does something heroic, they play it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what that song is about. This is because it's a jam, and it's a "There Goes My Hero," and they use the word hero, so it's played in montages. You know, from sports to any kind of thing that where someone does something heroic or comes through with a victory or something. That song is about a guy who wants to break up with his girlfriend and is scared to do it, doesn't want to do it, is afraid to do it, is worried about what's going to happen and the reaction, and he's really, really upset and nervous and doesn't really want to do it, and he shows up to her house to break up with her, and he sees her with another guy, and the guy is leaving. And that's what the song's about. The song is about a guy who was cheating on his girlfriend and leaving, and as he was leaving, there goes my hero. Now I can break up with her. That's what that song is about. It's not about being heroic. It's not about sports victories or anything like that. It's about a guy who wants to break up with his girlfriend. He sees the dude that's cheating on her, and that guy's his hero. Now he can break up with her. Let's see. Hi, Nick. Love your show. Here's a very recent breakup story. My boyfriend of 12 years, we lived together for over 9. He moved out a week before Christmas without telling me. Oh, my God. While I was away in Michigan from my nephew's graduation. And he's calling me while I'm away and acting normal. And I'm not talking about self-absorbed millennial. The loser is 63 years old. And about Valentine's Day, it's my birthday. I'm 53 today. Not feeling the love or happiness today. I will be watching the original My Bloody Valentine tonight. Oh, you're great. I'm glad that I hope you get over it. That sounds like a really terrible thing, man, and a terrible thing to go through. But happy birthday. I can wish you a happy birthday. And My Bloody Valentine will definitely be mentioned in the segment that we do about movies. Jason in Indiana says, there are two sides to every story. I would love to hear Nick's ex-wife's version of their breakups. Yeah, there are two sides to every story. I never really told you why we broke up, so you don't know the story from my end, Jason. You just know that we broke up. You don't know why or how. So there is not. I haven't even shared my side. Except it was, I will say this, as I mentioned about the second ex-wife, the cohabitation was miserable, but it was miserable for both of us. It was a situation that neither of us wanted to be in. So, how about a joyous breakup song like Leon Redbone's When I Kissed My Gal Goodbye? 815 area code says, I'm partial to the breakup song by Harry Nilsson, You're Breaking My Heart. That's from Squat. And then I Hate You by Prince, another great Prince song. Another great Prince song. So, let's see. My boyfriend of 5 years and I moved overseas together. After a year, I received a Facebook message from a girl called Lucinda. Turns out my boyfriend and her had been chatting and developing a pretty intense relationship via Tinder for the past few weeks. She had messaged me as she kept trying to find him on Facebook, but hadn't been able to. He had protectively blocked her. Eventually, she found him and saw that he was relocated with me. She went to my profile and messaged me, wanting to warn me that that he about his creeping. Turns out he'd fabricated a whole other life, and she sent me screenshots of all the dirty texts. They were time stamped, so of course I sat down and matched them all to when I had been home with him or at the times that he was messenger, and put together that he'd referred to me as his housemate. Meanwhile, while me and Lucinda were texting, he was still on his way to her place. When he showed up, she took a photo of him entering her apartment and sent it to me for proof, and he was obviously busted, and we broke up immediately, as did they. All right. Okay. Well, we're going to take a break here. We got the news coming up, and then after the news, we're going to jump right into movies that that you should watch for Anti-Valentine's Day. All right? More sad songs, too. All of that coming up on the Anti-Valentine's Day special right here on 720 WGN. Joy Division, Love Will Tear Us Apart. It's Anti-Valentine's Day, and I hate Valentine's Day. I just can't stand it. So we're talking about breakups, and we were talking about breakups, and we were talking about bad dates, and talking about some sad songs that are fun to play for Valentine's Day, and that's one of them. And we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m., and Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Yeah, so that Love Will Tear Us Apart. Sorry, Morrissey. Joy Division has one of the first to bring was one of the first to bring emotion and tempo together in this hit from 1980. Their band would go on to inspire The Cure, The Smiths, and so many others in the world of alternative music. And this song made it okay to cry and dance at the same time. There it is, Joy Division. Love Will Tear Us Apart. We're going to jump in to talk about movies that are fun to watch on Anti-Valentine's Day and movies that are completely inappropriate to watch. On Valentine's Day, they're not romantic, so we're going to wallow in that for a little while. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Were you going to say something?
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say anything Stanley Kubrick. I mean, yeah. start there.
Well, I mean, I think the first thing that pops into my head would be Eyes Wide Shut, which would be incredibly inappropriate to watch on Valentine's Day. But I would pick that one for sure.
Yeah, I would have gone with the Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, Clockwork Orange, absolutely. That's not fun to watch. Let's see. Here is Carrie on WGN. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, morning, Nick.
Morning.
Hey, great show, as always. I've listened to it for, I don't know, how long have you been doing this, about 18 years or so?
Yeah, something like that.
I've got a song that surprisingly hasn't been mentioned, but before that, I guess I'm anti-Valentine because my wife and I just don't care about it because 32 years ago, our first date was on the 18th. So we just skip over it and really don't care.
Yeah. Okay.
But my song is, surprisingly, nobody's mentioned it, the great Greg Kinn band, The Breakup Song.
Oh, sure. Classic. I mean, the name is, yeah. They don't ride them like that
like
anymore.
That anymore.
Yeah, that's a great song.
Yeah. So. Well, I love this every year, even though I'm not really anti-Valentine's, but it's cool.
Okay. Thank you, Carrie. I appreciate it, buddy. Okay.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Yeah, it's a tradition I've been doing here since 98. So, yeah, over 20 years I've been doing the Anti-Valentine's Day show here on WGN. And we usually get a great response, you know, because everybody has gone through a heartbreak. Everybody has gone through a bad breakup and had terrible dates. And not everybody enjoys Valentine's Day, and I am the number one hater of Valentine's Day. You're supposed to feel romantic today. You're supposed to be, you know, romantic today, and then What if you're not? What if you don't? I mean, why is it just this one day that we're supposed to be nice and loving to our significant other? Why shouldn't that be every day? I don't know. I hate it. And I also, you know, for people who are single, some people are really sad on Valentine's Day because they have nobody to share it with. You know, meanwhile, everybody's talking about how much they love each other and they're getting flowers and they're going out on dates. And they're giving each other this and giving each other that. And then there's people who get, I mean, I don't care because I hate Valentine's Day. And I never celebrated it when I had a girlfriend or when I was married. We never celebrated it. So it's just like what Carrie just said, that, you know, he's got a wife. He's happy. They just don't celebrate Valentine's Day. And I think that's the best way to go. But, you know, for people who really maybe want to be with someone and who get depressed on Valentine's Day, I think that sucks. So that's so many reasons that I list that I hate Valentine's Day. Anyway, so that's why I do this. We get some of the stuff off of our chest, and we can all bond together on things that we've been through. Here's John. He's in Decatur on WGN. Hi, John.
How you doing?
All right.
I just want to name a couple of performers. Alison Krauss, the queen of sad songs.
Mm. Yeah.
Who was born in Decatur, Illinois. A lot of people don't know that, so I would shout out to her.
Yeah.
And Hilary Hahn, who's a classical violinist, she solicited 26 composers to write a 1 to 5 minute encore for acoustical violin. I saw her in Chicago about 10 years ago, and she was playing some of these encores, and one was called Mercy by a gentleman called Max Richter, who wrote part of the soundtrack for Shutter Island, Martin Scorsese.
Oh, sure.
And it is riveting, Mercy. And she's coming to Chicago, and I encourage everybody to see this girl because she is a phenom.
Okay.
She was 10 years old. She was auditioned for Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia, which is on par with Juilliard.
Yeah.
And they put her right in. She could play Bach when she was 8. And when she was 16, she released her first album, which was Bach Partitas and Sonatas in the Crypt. Raved about this girl, and she is phenomenal.
Okay, all right.
I got one more song I just saw on my list here. Wildflower by Skylark.
Ah, yeah. All right. Okay, I don't know what's going on there, John, but something just went nuts. But I appreciate the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. A couple more texts, and then we're going to dive into some suggestions for anti-Valentine's Day movies to watch. 708 area code is my breakup. My heartbreak song is Beth by Kiss. So that's not really a breakup song. It's about a guy in a rock band, and he misses her, and he's going to be back with her. Beth is just a ridiculous song. You know, Ben, I'm old enough to have seen Kiss in concert in their heyday, like in the mid-70s. Mid and late 70s. I think I saw Kiss maybe 5-6 times. It was always ridiculous. Once Beth was a big hit, because Peter Criss, the drummer, sang that song, and he didn't sing any other songs. He only sang Beth. So what they would do was they would, during an encore, they would turn all the lights down on the stage, and a single spotlight would come up, and you'd hear the music being played, and Peter Criss would walk out with a microphone and then very solemnly sit on the edge of the stage and sing the song. And then the rest of Kiss would come out and surround him. Because it was such a beautiful song. uh, 814 area code says, this is from Jeff. Says, the worst breakup I had was in college. Dated a girl who I was pretty sure was cheating on me with my best friend. She lived in the upstairs apartment. To confirm this, I broke up with her and waited on the stairs to her upstairs apartment. Not long after he showed up, I looked at him and I said, I effing knew it, and walked away. Lost both the girlfriend and a best friend on the same day. 708 area code says, Nick and everyone, happy anti-Valentine's Day to you. I'm a big MASH fan. This is Sue, by the way, who says this. The episode last night involved Hawkeye telling a girl that he suffers from terminal marriage. That's good. That's good. That's really good. So, yeah. Have a decent day, and that's from Sue. So, all right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and let's get into some movies here. We want to hear from you. What movies do you think are great anti-Valentine's Day? Now, there are a lot of them that you can get to, but the ones that I'm choosing here, the ones that I have, are not necessarily like Clockwork Orange isn't really a movie that's inappropriate to show, Ben, because of its subject matter and content. But it's like, but for me, Eyes Wide Shut is about a screwed up relationship. And that's the kind of stuff that we're focusing on. Like, for instance, here's an anti-Valentine's Day show, movie that you can watch. Right off the top of my head, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. With Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet. That's about a relationship that goes south, that goes wrong, and it's about trying to erase the memories of someone who knew you're no longer with. So that fits the, you know what I mean? That fits the criteria of a movie that's like not good to watch on Valentine's Day, that is clearly not romantic at any in any capacity. So if you guys want to jump in with ones that you think you should watch at 312-981-7200. Let's break here for some weather, and then we'll come back and dive into the movie portion of Anti-Valentine's Day.
I've looked at life from both sides now, then win and lose, and still somehow it's life's illusions. I recall I really don't know life.
Ah, yes. Anti-Valentine's Day music continues with Joni Mitchell, Both Sides Now. That was released in 1969. In the movie Love Actually, Emma Thompson says it best when she tells her husband, Joni Mitchell is the woman who taught your cold English wife how to feel. Even without the heart-wrenching feature of this song in the movie, Mitchell's voice tells the story of delusion and heartbreak through soaring vocals and masterful lyrics. I've looked at love from both sides now, from give and take, and still somehow, it's love's illusions I recall. I don't really know love at all. There you go. Joni Mitchell. All right. We're talking about movies that you can watch for Anti-Valentine's Day, and I have some suggestions for you. 312-981-7200 for talk and text with your thoughts on the movies that will be fun to watch if you hate Valentine's Day. Anti-romantic movies. Well, this one is a big one. This is a movie called Blue Valentine, which features Michelle Williams and Ryan Gosling. And it is a brilliant movie, an absolutely brilliant movie that is incredibly well acted. But it's about the end of a marriage, the end of a romance. And it cross-cuts. The thing about the movie that really is devastating is that you see the beginning of this relationship and how these two people met and how they fell in love and how early in their relationship they were really, really close. And they went through some very, very, very personal things together very early in their relationship. And they cross-cut it between them now at the very end of their relationship. It's a devastating movie. It is a devastating movie. The first time I watched it, by the way, actually, Ben, the first time I watched this movie was under really ridiculous circumstances because I had a screener of it. And I watched it in that bedroom that I was sequestered to during the cohabitation period. Really? And it devastated me. I was just like beside myself when it was over. It was number one on my list of movies and the best movies of 2010. It was number one, and it remains one of the best anti-Valentine's Day movies of all time. I mean, it's a devastating movie about the end of a marriage. Devastating. All right, let's see what else we've got here. Husbands and Wives, Woody Allen's movie, Husbands and Wives, about a bunch of relationships at the same time, and Judy Davis is particularly amazing in this movie, like really, really amazing, and her performance is sort of devastating and heartbreaking. The little plot here is when their best friends announce that they're separating, a professor and his wife discover the faults of their own marriage, and it is really something. It really is. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in here. The one that I always go to, the go-to one for me, the go-to movie to celebrate anti-Valentine's Day is one of my favorite black comedies of all time, and that's The War of the Roses with Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner, starring also and directed by Danny DeVito. It is the best black comedy about the end of a marriage ever made. and I love War of the Roses, and I think the performances are so great, and the length of which this movie goes, and I showed it a few years back. I showed it in February in honor of Valentine's Day at my film club in Rosemont. By the way, if you guys want to come on, I would love to see you guys on March 5th. Really quickly, give a quick plug. One of the greatest movies ever made. One of the finest American movies ever made, featuring Jimmy Stewart and directed by the one and only Frank Capra. We are showing the absolute classic, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. And that's on Tuesday, March 5th. And I would love for you guys to come out and see it. It's only $10. Parking is free, and it's at the AMC Rosemont 18, formerly Movieco. And beforehand, let's all meet over at Murray Brothers Caddyshack. We've been working. We were in a partnership with those guys now, and they're going to offer some specials, some American Fair specials. And they will also, if you show your receipt or you show your ticket stub that you're going to go see Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, you get 15% off all your food. 15% off your food. And they've got great food there, and it's a really fun place, that full bar. And so we're going to go there, have some dinner, and it's only 2 minutes away from the theater. So you can meet up there at the Caddyshack restaurant. And then just go right over to AMC Rosemont 18, and you can watch one of the greatest American movies ever made. I've never seen it on the big screen, and I'm really, really excited to see it on the big screen, and that is Mr. Smith Goes to Washington with Jimmy Stewart, a true classic that I know a lot of people have never seen on the big screen. So it's going to be great. I mean, I love showing, you know, the real classic movies. Like, this is an American classic. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And if you want to reserve your seats, I would suggest you reserve your seats for Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Again, it's Tuesday, March 5th, Rosemont 18, AMC Rosemont 18. And the movie starts at 8 o'clock. Have some dinner beforehand at the Caddyshack restaurant and make an evening of it. And you can go to amctheaters.com to reserve your seats right now. And they'll be waiting for you on Tuesday, March 5th, when you come out and see Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, a true classic. You can't miss this opportunity to see this Jimmy Stewart classic on the big screen. Again, amctheaters.com. Reserve your seats now, amctheaters.com, and we'll see you on Tuesday, March 5th. All right, we're talking about movies that were perfect for anti-Valentine's Day. And I mentioned War of the Roses. It's one of my favorites of all time. And I love how dark it gets and how funny it is, and the fact that both of the characters die at the end of the movie. I also love that. And there's a moment in the movie where they fall from a chandelier and they're both laying on the floor, you know, dying. And Michael Douglas reaches over, you know, at one last attempt. They've been doing horrible things to one another now for the entire running time of the movie. So at the very end of the movie, he puts his hand and touches Kathleen Turner's shoulder as they're lying there, and then she reaches over, and you think she's gonna take his hand and hold it as they die. She takes his hand and throws it away from her, gets it away from her. It's one of the biggest laughs in the movie. It is a great movie. If you've never seen War of the Roses, I just ruined the ending for you, but it is a top notch movie and a great anti Valentine's Day movie. Here's Paul on WGN. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Nick. Hi. Is there a movie, Battle of the Vanities?
Battle of the Vanities. That doesn't ring a bell.
I could be wrong. I think it was War of the Roses I was thinking of.
Oh, yeah, War of the Roses, the one I was just describing, Kathleen Turner, yeah. and Michael Douglas, yeah.
Another one of my favorites is Fatal Attraction.
Yeah, that's another Michael Douglas. I guess Michael Douglas has made a lot of movies that are good for anti-Valentine's Day. So, all right, Paul, thanks. Thanks for the call. Let me get to, well, somebody just hung up, but She had Fatal Attraction. We got some text for Fatal Attraction too. 312 area code says Fatal Attraction. So let's see. 708 area code says, I absolutely despise Valentine's Day. My ex-wife had an affair on Valentine's Day while I was out of town for work. She didn't realize I had security cameras in the house. She was busted. We got divorced, and I haven't been a fan of it since. I can understand why. I can totally understand why you're not a fan of Valentine's Day. Jeez, brutal. Okay, let's take a break. We'll come back with the news, and then after the news, we'll talk more anti-Valentine's Day movies specifically. 312-981-7200. classic song right here. And this was a huge hit for Nazareth. And Nazareth was a very, very pretty heavy, hard band. And it was very unusual for them to have, like, their number one hit was a ballad called Love Hurts. And we're playing that in honor of Anti-Valentine's Day. Love Hurts by Nazareth. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 o'clock, and we're talking about Anti-Valentine's Day, particularly movies that are great for Anti-Valentine's Day that are completely inappropriate, not romantic at all. And I was mentioning a few, like Blue Valentine and Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and, of course, War of the Roses, which is one of my favorites. And here's Donald on WGN. Hi, Donald.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
I thought of Two for the Road with Albert Finney Audrey Hepburn. Very sad, you know, the ending of a marriage.
And we just lost Albert Finney. That was a hard one for me, man. Albert Finney was one of my favorite actors of all time. And here's another one, Donald. Another completely anti-Valentine's Day movie starring Albert Finney. It's called Shoot the Moon, and it's with him and Diane Keaton, and that's also a movie about a marriage breaking up, and it's unbelievable. I watched it last weekend when I heard the news that Albert Finney passed away, and so I watched Shoot the Moon, which is my favorite Albert Finney performance of all time. And
one other thing I wanted to say was, how about Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Yeah. It's
that's like two marriages going bad at the same time.
No, it's so unbelievable. You know. Yeah. Okay, Donald, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who's afraid of Virginia Woolf, my God. Great movie to watch on Valentine's Day.
We've gotten a couple texts for that one, too.
Oh, well, it's a classic. I mean, it's a classic. But I do want to mention again, Shoot the Moon. If you guys, I know, you know, it wasn't a terribly popular movie over the years. It's gained some, you know, some fans. But it's a really great film about divorce. Karen Allen, Peter Weller are also in it. The late great Dana Hill. And I can't tell you enough about those two lead performances. Albert Finney and Diane Keaton are amazing in it. And it is the perfect antidote to crappy Valentine's Day movies. And it is a devastating film. Probably the best movie ever made about divorce. All right, let's see. Is Dana Delaney Nick's future ex-wife, or is it still Molly Shannon? Oh, it's not Dana Delaney. It's Dana DiLorenzo. Dana Delaney is a completely different actress. Dana DiLorenzo is officially my future ex-wife. Like, this is for real. She is my future ex-wife. She was from Ash and Ash versus Evil Dead. And, you know, we've had a pretty great relationship going. And, you know, that we talk via text all the time. And whenever she comes to town, we hang out. So, but yeah, that's my future ex-wife is Dana DiLorenzo. That's how she's always introduced when she comes on the show. Molly Shannon. I always love Molly Shannon. I have a lot of future ex-wives. Madonna is one of my future ex-wives. Days of Wine and Roses is a good anti-Valentine's Day movie. Yeah. 773 area code says, went on a few dates with this guy. It seemed to go well, but then he just stopped calling. 6 months later, he called, and he never remembered going out with me. He was an alcoholic and literally had no recollection. He was working on his 12 steps and called to make amends. Well, it's good that he did that. Let's see. Dr. Strangelove is a great one. Boom. Another War of the Roses. My husband of 33 years loves My Bloody Valentine. He dressed up as Harry Warden for Halloween, and his nickname was Harry when he was younger. That's pretty funny. Right. A few more movies. How about Closer? The Mike Nichols movie with Julia Roberts, Clive Owen, Jude Law, and Natalie Portman. That's a great movie and a great anti-Valentine's Day movie. I say Closer is a great one. Someone texted in, and I agree, 500 Days of Summer is a great anti-Valentine's Day movie because she breaks his heart. That's Zooey Deschanel and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and it's a lovely movie. I really love that movie, 500 Days of Summer, and it's sad. It's sad. It's a good anti-Valentine's Day movie. Let's see. How about The Breakup with Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston? A movie that I actually hate, But yeah, I mean, that's it's, you know, the whole movie is about a breakup. It's a pretty kind of an unpleasant movie to watch. But yeah, that's another one. It's simply called The Breakup, and that's Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn. What else we got? Let's see. Yeah, this, let's see. I don't recall the title of the movie with Charles Grodin, but it was about divorce and involved fake sweat. I don't know. It was about divorce and involved fake sweat. The only thing that I can think of is The Heartbreak Kid. That's the first thing that pops into my head when you describe it like that. So, let's see. Here's Bob on WGN. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
Hey, how about The Way We Were with Streisand and Redford?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no
that's
question.
That's a crusher, yeah.
It is. That's a great one. And, of course, you have the beautiful theme song to that.
Barbara
Streisand. No, that's a good one. The way we were is a perfect anti-Valentine's Day movie.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Bob.
All right. Have a good day.
See you later. That's the complete opposite of the movie that I showed in February at my film club for my Valentine's Day, starring Robert Redford. Robert Redford is in The Way We Were, which is a great anti-Valentine's Day movie. But I showed Barefoot in the Park, which is, you know, a pro Valentine's Day movie, perfect romantic comedy to watch. 816 area code said, in the art meets life department of dangerous and depressing relationship, it's hard to beat The Boost with James Woods and Sean Young. Oh yeah. And then in real life, what was going on too, because James Woods was having an affair with Sean Young, and then she went nuts and started leaving like weird stuff on his doorstep. And like did some stalking, scary, weird stuff. So the you know that movie. By the way, nobody has ever seen that movie. It is a great movie with James Woods and Sean Young are both great in it. But yeah, and then it also says most people are aware of the off screen relationship they had during the filming and the stalking and the voodoo dolls and the failure to move on Sean Young. Not many people know that Glenn Close's Alex character in Fatal Attraction was originally named Sean. Was it inspired by Sean Young? Sean Young, she's had some interesting battles with craziness. So you've got this whole James Woods thing where she was obsessed with him and stalking, voodoo dolls left on his porch and all this weird stuff. And then, I don't know, you know, when she was first cast, I don't know if you guys remember this, but in the Tim Burton 1989 version of Batman, she was originally cast as Vicki Vale, not Kim Basinger. It was Sean Young.
Really?
Yeah. And while on location in London, she had an accident. She fell off a horse and broke her shoulder, and okay. she had to leave the movie. So Kim Basinger replaced her. It was announced that Tim Burton was going to do the sequel. He was going to do Batman Returns, which, by the way, is my favorite Batman movie of any Batman movie, and I'm including the Christopher Nolan movies. Batman Returns is my favorite Batman movie. I love that movie. But anyway, when they announced this, Sean Young campaigned for Catwoman like nobody would believe. She actually showed up in a Catwoman costume on the Warner Brothers lot. She had no invitation. She showed up on the Warner Brothers lot with a camera, and like people were, I guess she was filming herself or something, okay. Or somebody was filming her, and she was like making threats to Tim Burton, like into the camera lens, dressed as Catwoman, a terrible Catwoman costume, vaguely threatening Tim Burton about her if she doesn't get the Catwoman role. She had no invitation to see Tim Burton. And she just walked on she walked onto the Warner Brothers lot, got past security, and somebody saw her or something, and they called up to Tim Burton's office and said, "Listen, Sean Young's nuts, and she's here in a Catwoman costume, and I think she's going to come up to try and see you." Tim Burton left. He got the hell out of there. He got the hell out of there. Finally, security had to escort her off. She was sending things to him. She tried to show up again, dressed as Catwoman. So she's had some she's had some bouts with crazy over the years, Sean Young. I've interviewed PJ Souls many times.
Okay.
And PJ Souls, who was in Halloween, she was in Rock and Roll High School, uh-huh. She's in Stripes. Carrie, she's a legend. Yeah. And she's in Stripes with Sean Young. So the first thing I asked, first time I interviewed PJ, I was like, so you work with Sean Young? And she's like, yeah. And I go, so is she nuts or what? And she just started laughing her ass off. And she's like, she's different. And I'm like, okay, you've answered my question. I got it. You've answered my question. So 219 area code says, I think that guy was thinking of Bonfire of the Vanities instead of Battle of the Vanities. That's from someone named Beach. Yeah, Bonfire of the Vanities, I guess, would be an anti-Valentine's Day movie.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. 219 area code says, this is Tony, says, Misery is the best anti-Valentine's Day, plus Unpretty by TLC is a great anti-Valentine's Day song. Yeah, that's true. TLC, well, you can't go wrong with TLC.
Yeah.
I don't want no scrubs, man. I don't want no scrubs. All right. Let's break here for some weather, and then we'll wrap up the show. And I've got some more movie titles that are perfect for anti-Valentine's Day. And if you guys want to get in here, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, the old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything.
Yeah.
What have I become?
You know, we've talked about in the past a bunch of times. We talk about the best cover versions of songs. This is one of the best covers ever. It's Johnny Cash with Hurt, and here's what they say: How do you make a depressing song sadder? Have Johnny Cash sing it instead. By twinking the melody, replacing the reverberating effects with acoustic instruments, Cash adds an element of sadness that can only he can portray. The original song was released by Nine Inch Nails in 1994, but no one carries the story of heartbreak like Johnny Cash does. So, there you go. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate that's where we are. The Skyline Studio.
Yeah, that place.
That place. We're here till 5, and it's we're wrapping up the... I guess it's the 22nd or so annual anti-Valentine's Day show that I do every year around or on Valentine's Day. And we're wrapping it up with movies that you should watch for anti-Valentine's Day. How about Revolutionary Road? This is with Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet, who had such a lovely, lovely relationship in Titanic. People love them together in that movie. So Sam Mendes put them together in this movie about a young couple living in Connecticut during the 1950s. They struggle to come to terms with their personal problems while they're trying to raise their two children. I love this movie. I love Revolutionary Road. And it is a really, it's kind of, the first part of the movie is pretty evil because the first scene in the movie, much like Blue Valentine, the first scene in the movie is them seeing each other across the room at a party. And then meeting for the first time and really hitting it off and having a lovely night. And this is their first night together, and it's really special. And it looks like, you know, these two are meant to be, and they really, really are sweet to each other, and they love each other, and they're very touchy-feely. And it's just that moment at the very beginning, of a relationship, that moment when everything looks bright. The future looks great, and you are absolutely head over heels in love with this person. So that's the first scene in the movie, and then right after that scene, they smash cut to years later, and they're driving down the road, and they're in a massive argument. They pull the thing, and they're screaming at each other, saying like some of the worst things that you could possibly say to one another. So to see that juxtaposition, like to just suddenly jump ahead to like these two people who now absolutely despise each other. And then it continues to go on from there, and it's a very depressing movie, but it's really good. And Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet are both great in it. But I want to mention it, a shout out to one of our favorite actors, actually from Chicago, the great Michael Shannon. He got himself his first Oscar nomination for his role in Revolutionary Road, and he is great in the movie. Like, really, really great. You want to see one of Michael Shannon? Michael Shannon is a great actor, like, consistently awesome. But if you want to see, like, one of his strongest supporting performances, you should check out Revolutionary Road. A devastating movie, and perfect for anti-Valentine's Day. All right, here's Chuck on WGN. Hi, Chuck.
Yeah, the movie that always comes to my mind for Valentine's Day is Blue Velvet.
Oh, yeah, that's a lovely film to show for Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I collect versions of Love Will Tear Us Apart Again.
Yeah.
And the one I found recently that you really need to check out is the Hot 8 Brass Band.
Okay.
And they do a bunch of covers. They do Shake Your Body Down by the Jacks, and they do a bunch of Fly Jam brass band covers that I was going to call in for 3 for Thursday, but I never wake up in time.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Chuck.
All righty. Thank you.
Take care. There you go. Blue Velvet. Actually, most David Lynch movies would be inappropriate to show. Okay. How about Body Heat? Kathleen Turner, William Hurt. She in the movie is married to Richard Crenna, has like a very passionate sexual affair with William Hurt. And then being the femme fatale that she is, she convinces William Hurt to help her kill her husband so that she can get the inheritance to get away from this guy. Basically a tribute to Double Indemnity, which is another really good movie to watch for anti-Valentine's Day. But that's on there, too. How about Kramer versus Kramer? Since we've been talking about like sort of the ultimate movies about divorce, Kramer versus Kramer is very high on the list of divorce movies.
We've had several texts come in over the past couple minutes about that.
Dustin Hoffman, Meryl Streep. I haven't seen that movie in a very, very long time, but it won Best Picture of the year it came out. I believe Hoffman did win Best Actor. That's absolutely completely anti-Valentine's Day. How about The Weatherman, shot right here in Chicago, written by the great Steve Conrad? A Chicago weatherman separated from his wife and children debates whether professional and personal success are mutually exclusive. That's kind of the plot, but it fits in. It's Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage is really good in it. It's a very edgy movie. Really, really edgy and dark. Very, very dark. So, yeah, Weatherman. And also they use this city really well. They shot all around the city. Let's see. How about Swim Fan? That's a stalker movie right there. Erica Christensen and Jesse Bradford were in this one, and I remember going with a bunch of people to see it because we thought it was the stupidest title of all time. Swim Fan. That was like her screen name online. The character's screen name online. She becomes obsessed with this swimming guy, high school senior, and she starts stalking him. And they have a one-night stand, and it doesn't sit well with her, and then things get scary. And we went to go see it. I remember because the trailer for it was ridiculous. My friends and I laughed out loud at the title. Like, we were like, Swim Fan? What the hell? Swim Fan? So then we went to go see it, and we were excited because we wanted it to be one of those movies that was, you know, so bad. That was so bad, it was, you know, it's good and hilarious, and it's not. It was very disappointing. It was just a bad movie. That was the thing. I mean, it was bad. I mean, we were right about assuming that it was going to be bad, but it was just a bad movie and not the kind of fun laugh along bad movie that we wanted. So. What else you got?
I got, I have a movie.
Oh, okay.
For you. High Fidelity.
Yeah.
That's always been on the top of my list.
Yeah.
Cusack.
I have a very strange relationship with that movie because I adapted High Fidelity to the stage before Cusack. And we called it the Vinyl Shop. And
oh, wow.
We won a bunch of awards for it. It ran for a long time. We went to New York with it, and they came to see it. Cusack and DVD Vicentes came to see it. So I couldn't be objective. I couldn't review it when it came out, you know, because I was like, I can't be objective about this movie. I'm not a big fan of it. But I love the book, and we had fun doing the show. And I do want to mention, this is, since you're a fan of the movie, there's a little tidbit for you. The guy who played Barry in my production, that's the role that Jack Black played.
Yeah.
He won supporting actor. He won all kinds of awards. He was fantastic as Barry. Fantastic. So they invited him to audition for the movie. So we came in and auditioned for the movie, and he killed. And Stephen Frears, the director, wanted my friend Matt. Cusack wanted Jack Black, so Jack Black got the part. Which, you know, at that time, Jack Black was, you know, people knew Tenacious D. Wasn't as big as he is now. But it was down, it was between my friend Matt and Jack Black, and it went to Jack Black. But as kind of a, they gave my friend Matt, who played Barry, they gave my friend Matt a part in the movie. So he's in the movie. I'll tell you exactly who he is in the movie. And they also let him wear the jacket that he wore in our production, just as kind of a shout out. He wore like a stupid blue jacket with an American flag on it, and the you know, Frears and the costume people like, yeah, you can wear that. And as just so anybody who saw our play was like, oh, I think that's the guy who played Barry in the play. So he's the guy who, when Cusack says, I'm going to sell 5 copies of the Beta Band's new CD, you know that scene?
Oh, I love that.
He puts
scene.
It on. The guy who's going with his head and goes, hey man, who is this? That's Matt.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's
very cool.
So it's hard to be objective, but it is perfect to watch on Anti-Valentine's Day. And then the last one would be American Beauty with Kevin Spacey and Annette Bening. Great Anti-Valentine's Day movie. All right, well, everybody enjoy Valentine's Day because it sucks. So, yeah. And we'll be back tomorrow. We're not going to be doing the regular Friday features because Dan has been taking some time off, so Ben's going to be here. And we're not going to do the regular Friday features, but we will be talking about some travel nightmares and the best movie musicals. We're going to get into that as well. That's all coming up. All right. Stay tuned for the opening bell and the news, which is next. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back tomorrow morning, and we're going to talk about movie musicals and much more.